the War Room. It is the Thursday, the 16th of October, 2025. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. We got all sorts of things to talk about today. But our president, Donald Trump, is live right now pitching Trump RX and talking about the ways that he's going to make health more affordable for Americans, including making it easier for people to have more babies. Who could disagree with that? He's actually live in the Oval Office right now. We backed it up a little bit. Here's Donald Trump talking about Trump RX and some of the new developments, some of the new policies he's implementing to try to lower health costs for all Americans, especially women who are trying to get pregnant. Let's watch.
List their fertility drugs online at TrumpRx.gov at very, very heavily reduced prices, prices that you won't even believe. And ultimately, that's because of the favored nations. In addition, the FDA will be working with the company to expedite review and approval of another common fertility IVF drug, and currently it's selling in Europe. It's Pergoveris. Pergoveris. And that's a sounding nice name. Pergoveris. Why can't you name them nice, simple names? Nice, easy names. Doesn't matter. If it works, that's all we care about, right? Upon approval, this drug would directly compete against a much more expensive option that currently has a monopoly in the American market, and this will bring down costs very significantly. And the other one's going to have to come down also. Finally, EMD Serrano has agreed that all future drugs and everything that it develops and sells in the United States will be offset at most favored nation prices. I've been after this for a long time, and we started the process in the last administration, and then we had a little thing called COVID that came up. We had to focus on that, did a good job on that, too. And they'll bring a significant portion of their drug manufacturing back to the United States. So they're going to bring it largely back into the United States. And that's for a lot of reasons, but primarily because of the election result, November 5th, and maybe most importantly because of the tariffs. Because if they do it here, there are no tariffs. So we're going to be very close. I think by the end of this year, we're going to be very close to $20 trillion in investment. As an example, the Biden administration had less than $1 trillion, substantially less than $1 trillion for 4 years, Maria. Can you imagine? 4 years, less than one. We're going to break $20 trillion of investment, and we're already over $17 trillion, and that's in 8 months. Can you believe that? And he was at less than $1 trillion. And in addition to that, he had open borders allowing millions of people to pour in. What an administration that was. Worst president in history by far. As a result of these actions, the per cycle cost of drugs used in IVF will fall by an estimated 73% for American consumers. And the numbers are going to actually be very substantially higher as time goes by when it really kicks in for most of, I mean, think of those numbers. You know, I told the story last time because we were with Pfizer, and Pfizer's doing something very similar. But I told them that my first term, I was so proud of myself because I was the first president in 28 years where drug prices went down for the year. And you know what they went down? 1/8 of 1%. But I was so 1/8 of 1%. Now I'm getting them down, Maria, 500%, 600%, 800%. In some cases, even more than that. It's hard to believe. But I was proud. I said, oh, wow, I'm the first one. 1/8 of 1%. And I was proud of that. Now I realize. And I called the news conference. Some of you are at that news conference, actually. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, congratulations. We've gone down by 1/8 of 1%. And now we're going down 500%, 600%, 700%, 800%, Richard. So it's really something. For most administrations and all of the people involved in this kind of thing, this action would be a crowning achievement of their agenda for fertility health. But for us, it's really just the beginning. It's just a start. It's one of many things we're doing. Today, we're also taking historic steps to vastly expand access to insurance coverage for fertility care, including IVF.
I think this is an absolutely good thing. I know people have qualms about IVF. I don't. I got nephews that wouldn't exist without it. God bless Trump.
I also notice your cup is stained blue on the inside.
I've been caught.
You got a little, did you find some methylene blue floating around here?
I did, man. I commandeered some from Harrison's office.
Yeah, it's jonestore.com. Check out the supplements we have, 25% off apparel. Methylene blue you can get for 50% off if you get a subscription and you never run out. So,
amen.
I know Stuart's going to be looking for a bottle. I'm going to go try to track one down for him. While
if you don't mind, I have a bottle that fills. Too.
You like both. What do you like better?
You know what? I like them both.
Okay.
When I'm traveling, the pills definitely.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's not going to, you're not worried about it breaking open or.
No, like on the way over here, I took a couple.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm driving.
Yeah. So with driving, did you feel more alert while you were driving or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took a couple shots while I'm in here in lieu of coffee. You guys ran out of coffee, so I went and got some methylene blue.
That's all he needs is a little methylene blue.
Back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a lot to talk about today. And we've got some great guests coming up. Ian Carroll will be joining me in the next hour to talk about a whole host of things. He, of course, has been studying and investigating the Charlie Kirk assassination, and I want to sort of get the latest from him on that, including talking a little bit about some of the suspicious Google searches that have been uncovered recently. I mentioned them yesterday. We'll get into that with Ian Carroll. I'll also be joined by Corn Pop, who you know well if you're a regular viewer of InfoWars, one of our regular callers who has been waging a one-man war against the state of Maine for a very long time and is slowly but surely breaking through. And it's incredible. Of course, there's other people involved and other activists there with him. But Corn Pop has really led the charge. And he recently had a video go totally viral, being shared by libs of TikTok and Colin Rugg and a number of other major right-wing influencers, where Corn Pop and some other activists, I don't know if Corn Pop actually gets undressed, but they start getting undressed in the, you know, council room, saying, oh, does this make you uncomfortable? Well, imagine how it feels to be a little girl in a locker room when adults start undressing next to you. Yeah, it's actually a very good point he makes. So I'm very excited to talk to him and celebrate the continuing success of his crusade against transgenderism in schools and sports there in the state of Maine. So very, very excited to talk to him. After all, there are so many people that are regular callers, regular features on our program that represent the ideal info warrior, the person that they got regular jobs, they, you know, taking care of their families, but they never let a moment go to waste. They're constantly protesting, getting involved, being active in their local communities. And you can see the way these things may start off small, but they're like a snowball rolling downhill. They get bigger and better and more effective as time goes on. And it's just absolutely wonderful to see. So we're going to celebrate Corn Pop and talk to him about his ongoing battle. But I got a stack of news here. I didn't intend for it to be, but it was just sort of the top news stories of the day. And they're all Trump-centric and really driven by Trump. And they're all pretty good. I mean, I like a lot of them. I like most of them. Some of them could represent a monumentally good thing. No pun intended, but my first story is actually literally about a monument. And it's triumphant as well. Trump's epic Arc de Trump. To dominate D.C. skyline, President Donald Trump has unveiled ambitious plans to erect an Arc de Trump opposite the Lincoln Memorial, marking the nation's 250th anniversary in 2026. Funded privately by supporters, the monument, inspired by Paris's Arc du Triomphe, aims to greet visitors crossing the Memorial Bridge from Arlington National Cemetery. Renderings debuted during an Oval Office meeting last week, showcasing Trump's vision for a transformed Capitol. Of course, he already has transformed the Capitol in a number of ways, making it significantly safer. I'm a little bit torn on this, I have to admit, because on one hand, I pretty much have a de facto approval of monumental, epic, and triumphant architecture. I see it and I say yes. Yes, I want three, please, right now. We're building something that exists for no other reason than to awe and inspire with its grandeur Yes, please. That's what civilization is all about. So I'm very excited about that. On the other hand, a triumphal arc is usually after you, triumphal arch is usually after you win a war. It just feels a little bit like tempting fate to start building your triumphal arch before the war is won. I feel like that's, you're doing things in the wrong order here. First, we need to fully conquer the United States. First, we need to truly rid ourselves of the traitors within and the insurrectionists who are at this moment working and building strength to tear down the country. We have to defeat those enemies first. Then you raise an arch for the triumph. So I wonder if we are doing things sort of the other way around here. This is a long and storied tradition of great men. But, you know, usually these arches, like the reason they were erected, it was to tell the story of the victory. There's classic Arc of Titus in Rome. And, you know, on it are all these friezes, these sculptures showing, sort of telling the story of the triumph that he was able to achieve. So we got to achieve the triumph first. It'll be great. It kind of like how in the Arch of Titus, you have like the Roman soldiers carrying off the menorah from the, you know, temple in Israel and Judea at the time. It would be like that. So it would be like a bunch of ICE agents carrying off, like a U-Haul truck full of signs, something like that. Like, I want to see the triumphant imagery etched into stone. I want to see these images of like, you know, Antifa members in inflatable frog costumes being tear gassed by ICE. I want that rendered in relief on the triumphant arch. So we got to do those things first, and then we tell the story preserved in stone for generations into affinity. I mean, that's the purpose of these things. So I'll show you a video of Trump talking about this, but I think we're just putting the cart before the horse a little bit. Again, we don't want to tempt fate, and it just seems a little unlucky. Be raising a triumphal arch when your enemies are still numerous and active. So that's just me. That's just me. What other imagery would we see, do you think? If it were to be inscribed, what would it be? COVID would be in there. I mean, yes, I want to see the imagery of like the Nuremberg trial set up with Anthony Fauci up there and Bill Gates up there. Like once we get that, then we build a monument to it. That's the way this thing needs to go. That's the direction we need to be moving. Let's go to clip 21 here. This is President Trump showing off these plans for this triumphal arch.
And we show another building. It's an arc. It's the arc. So that circle, that's Arlington Memorial Bridge, as you know, it's sort of the most important one, a very important structure. And at the end of it, you have a circle that was built 150 years ago, nobody knows really when. And in fact, they put a couple of columns on each side. So you have two columns on one side, two columns on the other. But yet, in the middle, just a circle. And everyone that passes it said, something was supposed to be built there. That's true. But a thing called the Civil War interfered. That's a good reason. I would say that would be a good reason, right? The great Ike Perlmutter. The Civil War, if you said you're having a war, I think they have a good reason not to build. Again, you know, they were building the Washington Monument, then they stopped, and you could see where they stopped because the stone is a little different color when you get up to the middle. But anyway, they stopped here. And then they were, in 1902, they would have put a statue of Robert E. Lee up. Would have been okay with me. A lot of people wouldn't have liked it. Would have been okay with me. Would have been okay with a lot of the people in the show, but they didn't do that. And so for years and years it sat. And every time somebody rides over that beautiful bridge going right to the Lincoln Memorial, it's so beautiful, right? It's, they literally say something's supposed to be here. And so we have versions of it, sizes of it, and it's going to be really beautiful. I think it's going to be fantastic. There's a rendering of what it will look like. You have three sizes. That would be the largest one. This is just a model of what it would look like in either of the three, any of the three sizes, which is right now, I don't know if you can see. So
there's a little model of the triumphal arch. It is a beautiful, you know, piece of architecture with a statue of, could be victory on top there.
Very good. That is Lincoln.
so funny. You genuinely tell this is like what he cares about. The audio is not very good because he stepped away from the podium here, but he's showing off the models, cracking everybody up.
Whichever one that looked good. I happen to think the large looks better. Why are you shocked?
Trump in the zone here. Oh, it'd be slightly higher than the Arc de Triomphe. Excellent. Okay, so there are three options, the smaller, medium, and largest. And he's like, I think the largest would probably be best. Yeah, it would be. No, it would be. And it's funny. So what he's describing is there's a roundabout that's aligned directly across the bridge to Arlington Cemetery, and something was supposed to be built there, but it never happened. And then after the Civil War, something else was supposed to be built there. It never happened. And so you just have this big empty circle space that was clearly designed to be the home of a monument that just hasn't ever been built. Trump's like, let's build the monument, in this case to celebrate a quarter millennia of America, our 250th anniversary in 2026. President Trump's unveiled an ambitious plans to erect an Arc de Trump opposite the Lincoln Memorial, marking the nation's 250th anniversary in 2026. And again, I think first win the war, then build the Arc to your triumph, and etch in it. I'm thinking like, you know, the video of the girl with the green skin screaming no, like when Trump was inaugurated in 2016. I think I'd want to have that carved in there. I think, you know, I think it should be memes. I think that the Arc de Trump should be covered in memes in the same way the Arc of Titus is covered in reliefs showing the, you know, war against their enemies in the East. I think that's what we need. That one. Yeah, right there. Freeze it. Carve it out. That's it. That needs to be, you know, embossed on the side of the Arc de Triumph. So 1,000 years from now, people can wander the ruins of what was once Washington, D.C., and look at this and say, who were these demons that once ruled the world? Who were these creatures that were driven back to the depths of hell by God Emperor Donald Trump? I like it. I like it a lot, actually. Let's just win the war first. Win the war first. Then the arch. And actually, it's kind of funny that he's like, you know, they weren't able to build this because of the Civil War. I know. Glad that won't happen again, right? Good thing we're not on the cusp of another one of those. And he even mentions the Washington Monument was only about halfway built when the Civil War happened and they stopped construction. So you can actually see in the coloring of the Washington Monument, it changes about 2/3 of the way up because they had to use different stone after the pause of construction. Let me go through some other stories here. So these are the top stories of the day. Trump considers overhaul of refugee system that would favor white people. The Trump administration is considering a radical overhaul of the U.S. refugee system that would slash the program to its bare bones while giving preference to English speakers, white South Africans, and Europeans who oppose migration, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. The proposals, some of which have already gone into effect, would transform the decades-old program aimed at helping the world's most desperate people into one that conforms with Mr. Trump's vision of immigration, which is to help mostly white people who say they're being persecuted while keeping the vast majority of other people out. Let me translate this for you here. Donald Trump wants to actually help people for whom the refugee program was intended in the first place. The entire reason we have a refugee program or an asylum program is because of World War II, where you had the Nazis hunting down Jews across Europe. And in some cases, you know, Jews were trying to escape to America. America turned them away because we're like, well, you got to, you know, we're full. Sorry. You know, we got immigration restrictions. You're not allowed. And so then they were sent back to Europe or never got here in the first place and, you know, ended up being killed. So we're like, all right, well, we got to have a plan for that. We got to have a process through which we can circumvent laws if the laws are getting in the way of us rescuing people, which makes sense to me, which I think as a Christian moral country that prides itself on being a bastion of freedom, symbolically, it's a very good thing for us to do. Then it got abused and was abused and abused and abused and abused. So it went from this critical situation where people either were welcomed into the country or died in World War II into anybody who can scrabble their way across the southern border and download an app could claim they were seeking asylum, make up whatever phrase they need to say, like Open Sesame. Similar to Open Sesame or Abracadabra, you just had to say the right syllables in the right order, and that would then claim you asylum, and you were able to come into the country and travel wherever the hell you want and ignore court dates and get free health care and food and school for your children, and then you can have children and they become citizens. It became utterly and completely worthless, less than worthless. It became abused and therefore needs to be, I would say, wholesale eradicated. But if you're gonna have it, then it should exist exclusively for people that are actually genuinely under direct threat from their government. That's the purpose of it. That's why it was in place. Not because someone from Guatemala, someone from Nicaragua says that they don't feel safe there for whatever reason because it's unstable or whatever. No, it's supposed to be for people whose governments won't protect them and they need protection from a government. Like the white people in South Africa who are being deliberately genocided by their own government. Or I'd say Palestinians. Now, I think that would actually contribute to the genocide there. So, but if anybody in the world deserves asylum, deserves to call themselves a refugee, it's the people for whom their entire town has been reduced to rubble and, you know, are being killed while they wait in line for food. Like, that's what it's for. It's not for everybody who's anybody from anywhere in the world. As long as they can get into America, they claim asylum. That's ridiculous, absurd. It needs to go away. And I've explained this a million times, but it should be obvious to everybody. It's like if you have a charity that studies cancer and is trying to cure cancer, so-called, but it turns out all the money that's given to them just goes into the pockets of the CEO, and they're just, you know, driving around in sports cars. Like, sorry, your charity has to go away now. And the response to that will be, oh, so you want people to, you know, die from cancer? And it's like, no, you screwed up the good thing. Oh, man, I just got something in my eye. Sorry about that. I'm not winking. I'm totally serious right now. I'm not joking. Just something flew into my eye. So anyway, I'm glad they're doing this. And maybe this would just be pressure on Europe. Like, no, European people are not represented by their governments anymore. They're not protected by their governments. They're actually being hunted down and destroyed by their own governments. So I think we should open up refugee status to them. I think if you're worried about your kid being raped by the mobs of, you know, Muslim men that are systematically kidnapping white girls and not being punished by the establishment, like, yeah, you need to get the hell out of there. And we can be a safe harbor for you. If you're in threat of being thrown into jail for 5 years by the UK government because you dared to suggest something was true, because it was. I mean, these are the people that are actually under oppression from their government and need safe harbor. We should provide that. And yeah, if you speak English, that just makes everything all that easier. But again, it's these people know exactly what they're doing. And again, if you really did actually sincerely and for the right reasons like the asylum program, then you would be against the way it's being abused. Obviously. If you actually like having, you know, being a safe harbor for people that are being hunted by their government, then what you don't do is give the same protection to every random person that swims across the Rio Grande. So you force us into this. Once again, Democrats, because they cannot be trusted with power, they cannot be trusted with civilizational vulnerabilities, we can't have them anymore. It sucks, but these people can't be trusted. They can't be trusted with liberty. They can't be trusted with charity. They can't be trusted with any good thing. They just take advantage of it until it can't exist anymore, and then they cry foul. Sorry, you need to stop being ridiculous monsters. Please. Meanwhile, Trump warns Hamas, quote, will have no choice but to kill them if carnage continues. Donald Trump has warned Hamas he will go in and kill them if bloodshed persists in the Gaza Strip. His fierce warning seeks to end violence that has continued to plague Gaza, with Hamas executing collaborators and killing rivals in deadly gun battles. Trump's feeling on the violence seemed to have hardened significantly. He said on Tuesday that Hamas's activities don't bother me much. suggesting the terror group had simply taken out a couple of gangs that were very bad. Then he vowed that the U.S. would force them to disarm, perhaps violently, if they refused to do so. In writing on Truth Social on Thursday, Trump insisted he would have no choice but to go in guns blazing if things don't settle down. Hamas said it recalled a large number of its security forces, which mostly melted away during Israel's operations on the Strip. Their mission was to cleanse Gaza of outlaws and collaborators, a spokesperson said. Rival clans, some reportedly armed by Israel, grew in stature during the two-year war while Hamas was occupied by the IDF, or with the IDF, rather. Now the group appears to be cracking down and reasserting its superiority. Horrifying videos emerged of cold-blooded executions on the streets of Gaza just hours after the final surviving hostages were freed, and dozens more were reportedly killed in violent skirmishes in Gaza City. Meanwhile, Israel has threatened to resume fighting and shatter the peace deal after Hamas said it was unable to find any more hostage bodies. The terror group was supposed to hand over 28 bodies by Monday, as the last 20 living captives were returned after two traumatic years, but 19 Israelis dead remained in the blitzed coastal strip amid fears Hamas is keeping bargaining chips and playing sick games with families desperate for closure. The reality is the bodies are probably buried under rubble and are difficult, if not impossible, to find, let alone identify, which we knew was going to be the case early on. And Syrian girl on Monday talked about what was going on with Hamas carrying out these executions and about how these were basically ISIS-aligned groups that were being funded and armed by Israel to be collaborators. I'm not exactly in favor of summary executions, but at the same time, Israel is still bombing Gaza and has killed, you know, upwards of 10 people today alone in the Gaza Strip. So I'm not sure why Hamas doing it is such a red line when Israel seems just as guilty. U.S. Special Operations helicopters near Venezuela to expand Caribbean mission. The U.S. Military Elite Special Operations Aviation Unit appears to have flown in the Caribbean waters less than 90 miles from the coast of Venezuela in recent days. According to a visual analysis by Washington Post, the helicopters were engaged in training exercises, according to a U.S. official, that could serve as preparation for expanded conflict against alleged drug traffickers, including potential missions inside Venezuela. And it does seem like the regime change operation on Venezuela is moving forward. Of course, Alex and Nick got into this quite a bit on the Alex Jones Show today and, you know, broke it down pretty thoroughly. I don't think I have too much to add to that, except, of course, that it's really impossible for me to not align it to and, you know, feel like it has something to do with the fact that Venezuela is sort of buddy-buddy with Iran, and that we see as Israel sort of took care of its immediate neighbors in Hezbollah and some of the other, you know, Syria, places like that. They started moving out to sort of the periphery and taking out some of the people that are providing resources for their enemies. And maybe that has nothing to do with it, but it feels like that has something to do with it. It feels like there's not a real good reason why Trump would all of the sudden choose Venezuela to go so hard after, even though they've been more or less in the same condition that they are now for the last decade at least. So what has changed? Well, it seems to me like stuff outside of Venezuela has changed that is impacting that situation. And, I don't say that because I want it to be true. I just say it because it seems to be. And we'll get into, on the other side, how it always seems to. It always seems to have something to do with Israel. And I'm sick of talking about it. And I'm sick of this being the case. The irony is, it's only the case because we don't talk about it. So we'll talk about it on the other side, and we'll figure out why all scandals lead back to Israel. Stay with us.
You're not going to talk.
Wasted.
You're not going to talk to
wasted
me. You're not going to talk to me and talk
and
over me.
New York residents
because you don't want
paid.
To hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
Go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
I've been on air for 31 years, but 28 years ago I launched InfoWars, and it's changed the world thanks to all of your support of the operation. People like Hakeem Jeffries want us to shut up.
Can you, like, shut up?
That's what all their lawfare, all their lawsuits, all their attacks have been about. And they're passing anti-free speech laws in Canada, the UK, Europe. They're arresting people for even criticizing the government. And they're trying to bring that here. And that's why it's so important to try to keep InfoWars on the air. But regardless, you can easily be taken off, very, very soon, we're going to continue on in the fight. But going forward, we'll no longer be called InfoWars. That's why it's so important now, which could be your last chance, to get all of the great shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it, that have InfoWars on it. The classic designs and some of the new designs. That's why we're launching the InfoWars Veteran Edition, or Veterans of the InfoWar. All of you that supported the InfoWar, you are the InfoWar. You are the modern Paul Revere's. You're the reason we're having this massive success here in the United States and around the world. You're the reason the globalists are desperate and admit their entire system is collapsing down around them. We're winning major battles, but we've not yet won the main war. And I have been proud to fight with you over these decades. I am so blessed and satisfied by the incredible effect we've all had together. So to celebrate 28 years of the InfoWar, 1997 to 2025, which could be the end of this incarnation of it, but I hope we go on. And regardless, the InfoWar never dies. It belongs to the people. It's the term for information warfare. They use lies. We use truth. But the URL and this building and all of that goes away, and it's like rocket engines, boosters falling off as the main craft goes into escape velocity and orbit. As John Paul Jones famously said, the founder of the U.S. Navy, I have not yet begun to fight. But it is important to get original InfoWars gear while you still can. All the classic designs and the new Veterans of the InfoWar designs that are limited edition and help keep this operation on the air and fund the new Alex Jones network that's being built. You've already seen some of the studios, the great work the crew's been doing. But it's much more expansive than what you've seen, and that'll be revealed very, very soon. And that's thanks to all of your support. So when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you will have access to the widest selection, over 500 designs of Patriot t-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. And all of the t-shirts are $19.97 in honor of the year that I launched InfoWars.com itself. So again, thank you all for your support. And there's more.
But wait, there's more.
With promo code Hakeem at checkout, because he wants us all to shut up, and we're not going to shut up, get an additional 10% off right now. That's promo code Hakeem. Use it now.
Oh, I'm listening. So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Hakeem Jeffries hopes you shut up. Hakeem Jeffries hopes you don't help keep us on the air, because then he can continue his tyrannical activity. That's why it's a revolutionary act when you support this operation and wear the Patriot apparel, available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 28 years of the InfoWar. Thanks for keeping us on the air. And Hakeem, we've just begun to fight. We're not going to shut up.
Tree will get you nowhere. We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, this is the War Room. My next story in the stack was this: Trump to meet with Putin, Zelensky in separate meetings for Russia-Ukraine war negotiations. From post-millennial President Donald Trump has said he will be meeting with Vladimir Putin in Budapest, Hungary, in order to negotiate a possible peace in the Russia-Ukraine war. He'll also meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the Oval Office on Friday. This comes after Trump secured a ceasefire agreement in Gaza with the release of all living hostages. So once again, we're sort of in this weird nonsense position where things are both accelerating towards war and peace at the same time. I guess this is Trump's negotiation tactic. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Tomahawk missiles and striking deep inside Russia at the same time. They apparently had a great phone call. They spoke on the phone for 2 hours and seem like they're once again on the cusp of making some sort of deal. And Trump was live in the Oval Office just a few minutes ago answering questions, and the first two questions happened to be about the last story we covered and his threats to Hamas, and the second question was about this meeting with Putin. So I want to go to this press conference in the Oval Office, hear what his response is about both of these international situations.
President, previously you did not seem to be bothered regarding Hamas cracking down on what you called gangs, actually,
what?
Couple of gangs. And today you issued a threat against Hamas on Truth Social. What has changed?
And what was said? Go ahead.
You said if they continue killing, keep killing innocents in Gaza, that... Yeah. If that continues, the United States will go after them.
I know I issued a strong statement. That's right.
Well, they used to be gangs, and now you're saying innocents. What made you think they're innocents now?
Well, I'm looking at what's happening, and that was the deal that was made, and we'll see what happens. It's calmed down. It's a tough neighborhood. We know that. We have a commitment from them, and I assume they're going to honor that commitment. I hope they do. And I know I understand they brought back some additional bodies today. It's a rough deal when you think of it, right? Very rough. We have our hostages back completely. We were very lucky with that. But it's a tough situation. They brought back bodies today, as you probably know. But they also said they're going to behave. We're going to find out if they behave. If they behave, good. If they don't behave, we'll take care of it. Yeah, please.
Following up on that, President,
how
said,
you say you?
You
see CNN fake news. Go ahead.
You said in your post that if they kept killing people in Gaza, we would have no choice but to go in and kill them. So do you mean U.S. forces would go in and take out Hamas?
No, I didn't say who would go in, but somebody will go in. It's not going to be us. We won't have to. There are people very close, very nearby that will go in. They'll do the trick very easily. But under our auspices.
Could I follow up? You also posted about your call with President Putin today, and you spoke about meeting in Hungary with him. Do you have a timeline or a date set for when?
Yeah, I would say within 2 weeks or so. Pretty quick. Marco Rubio is going to be meeting with his counterpart, as you know, Lavrov, and they'll be meeting pretty soon. They're going to set up a time and a place very shortly. Maybe it's already set up. They've already spoken. And I thought it was a very good phone call. I thought very productive. But I'll be meeting with President Putin, and we'll make a determination. Tomorrow I'm meeting with President Zelensky, and I'll be telling him about the call. I mean, we have a problem. They don't get along too well, those two, and it's sometimes tough to have meetings. So we may do something where we're separate but equal. We'll meet and talk parties, but this is a terrible relationship the two of them have, and it's one of those things. I've seen things that nobody would believe, but this is one of them. So I'll be meeting. We're going to be meeting in Hungary. Viktor Orban is going to be hosting, and it's really something that's time. Last week, over 7,000 people were killed. That's ridiculous. And, you know, it doesn't affect our country. We're not losing people. We're not losing Bobby. We're not losing Americans. But they're losing Russians, Ukrainians, mostly soldiers, for the most part soldiers. And we hope we're going to get it stopped. I thought this would be, because of my relationship with President Putin, I thought this would be very quick. And it's turned out to be, who would think I did Middle East before I did this? We did a total of eight now, seven and now eight. And we're going to make this number 9.
Mr. You said you posted that there was great progress. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Was it a shift in Putin's tone? Was it something new he told you? Did he give you any message to give?
You're talking about the whole
President Zelensky tomorrow.
It just seems to me that, look, it's only a field. That's all I've done in my whole life. I've made deals. I know about deals. I do it well. I don't think any president's ever ended a war, frankly. One war. I did eight of them, Maria, right? And but I don't know. Did Bush ever end? Do you think Biden ended a war? Biden started wars because he was stupid. But do you think Biden ended any wars? No. I don't know of anybody that ended wars. I ended eight of them. Now, it's going to be 9. I think we're going to have this one done hopefully soon. But I'll be meeting him probably over the next 2 weeks. First, Marco is going to be meeting. And the vice president, as you know, is very much involved. The whole team is involved. Steve Witkoff will be involved. Yeah, please.
What did you tell him about the Tomahawks? Did you discuss the Tomahawk missiles? Did you discuss?
Well, we talked about it a little bit. Didn't say much. But I do say to you, you know, we need Tomahawks for the United States of America, too. We have
a lot of them, but we need them. I mean, we can't deplete for our country. So, you know, they're very vital. They're very powerful. They're very accurate. They're very good, but we need them too. So I don't know what we can do about that.
Why do you think a second meeting with Putin now will yield different results?
Well, I think Alaska actually set a stage, and that wasn't very long ago, but it set a stage. You have to understand, I came into this situation. I didn't start this war. This is a Biden deal, and I came into it, and it was a mess. It could have led to World War III. In my opinion, this could have led to World War III. That won't happen, but it could have. So I came in, this war was raging. When I left, this wasn't even a thought. For 4 years, there nobody talked about it. I spoke to President Putin about Ukraine. It was the apple of his eye, but there was never going to be doing anything like this. And this all went because of some really bad decisions that were made.
So that's Trump saying the war with Russia could have easily been World War III, but that's not going to happen. So really showing some, you know, major moves towards peace, saying that the Alaska summit merely set the table, but that things changed in that 2 hour phone call. Now, this just broke 30 seconds ago. Benny Johnson reported former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton has officially been indicted over his handling of classified information. So this is breaking news literally less than a minute ago. Former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton indicted. His former National Security Advisor turned adversary has been indicted by a federal grand jury in Maryland, according to two sources. Bolton, who's been under investigation for allegedly unlawful handling of classified information, becomes the third high-profile Trump political enemy to be indicted in less than a month. We gotta keep doing this. It's just, okay, has become the third high-profile, not Trump political enemy, criminal. There you go. I fixed it for you, CNN. Bolton, who's been under investigation for allegedly unlawful handling of classified information, becomes the third high-profile criminal to be indicted in less than a month. He allegedly shared highly classified information with his wife and daughter over email, sources told CNN. Sources previously told CNN that part of the Justice Department's investigation centers around notes he was making to himself on an AOL email account. At times writing summaries of activities like diary entries when he was working for Trump. He was using AOL, folks. He was using AOL. FBI agents executed a search warrant on Bolton's Maryland home and Washington, D.C. office this summer. The agents seized multiple documents labeled secret, confidential, and classified, including some about weapons of mass destruction, according to court records. John Bolton, you have been indicted. Have fun in jail, sir. Your reign of terror comes to an end. And, you know, it's great to see. It is wonderful to see. I'm not even going to qualify this. This is a good thing. This is an absolutely good thing. Now, I wonder if there's a reason why the people that are being indicted right now in the highest level at the federal level, Comey and Bolton, are both technically Republicans. I wonder if that's a strategy of Trump, because so far all of the high-level Democrat operatives have escaped justice so far. Letitia James, of course, isn't high-level, so she doesn't count. She's just a state prosecutor who will go down for her own crimes. So that's very good to see. Very good to see mustache man John Bolton indicted. For classified documents in this case, I'd like to see him indicted for war crimes, but hey, whatever, whichever one, somebody's got to hold these absolute psychopaths to account. And John Bolton has always been one of the worst of the worst. And I think I said this before when they're first talking about Bolton being investigated for the classified documents, that sort of thing. I think John Bolton fell for Trump's trap. I think Trump hired John Bolton in the first place. Yes, because he knew that people were scared of him and he could intimidate people by simply having him in the room. Because if you have John Bolton in the room, people are like, oh my God, they're unhinged. What are they going to do? These people are insane. So he used him for that, but he also, you know, made him sign NDAs and, you know, was forced to work with him and give him access to stuff. So I wonder if this wasn't a long laid trap for old John Bolton, bringing him in only to use his participation in the Trump administration as a groundwork to later charge at him, which is good, which is good. I mean, that's, you know, it's not like it's a dishonest trap. It's just, you know, hoisted by his own petard, as it were. So that's very good to see. Very, very good to see. And of course, Trump once again making statements in the Oval Office that are just fantastic. I mean, if we can get peace in Gaza, we can get peace with Russia, then he can focus on the stuff going on here. Then maybe, maybe he can actually focus on the real threat of China and what's going on here. Of course, he had a weird, he had kind of an interesting turn of phrase there where he said, it won't be us going in to get Hamas. It won't be Americans. It'll be under our auspices, but we have people there that'll take care of it. I guess that's just the IDF. That's not exactly under our auspices, though. But okay, yeah, all very good stuff. So there it is, folks. Just now breaking. John Bolton has been indicted. Of course, we had the story earlier today at InfoWars, grand jury indictment of John Bolton imminent. Tomorrow's news today. This was broken by Robert Barnes yesterday on the Alex Jones program, telling you that the Bolton indictment was imminent, and here we are one day later. One day later, tomorrow's news today has never been more literal, folks. And if you want to support our mission to always be ahead of the curve and being able to tell you about what's coming next, please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. People, they're not still giving out free hats, are they? This was supposed to end yesterday. Are they still giving out free hats? Maybe they are. I don't know. Free $10. Free $10, no minimum spend. Plus 500 bonus entries to the drawings, the raffles, and you get 25% off every product store-wide, 25% off all of the supplements, all of the merchandise, plus an extra free $10, plus $500 bonus entries, plus if you're a VIP member, you get an extra 10 bucks. Plus, so if you're a VIP member and you buy a war bond and you do it today, that's basically $30 from us for free on top of the $25 off site-wide. So if you've ever wanted to support us, now really is the time. And make sure you're stocking up on the InfoWars branded apparel because it's going to be a collector's item in the very near future. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Yeah, the crew set up a whole like storefront, a storefront display there in the studio. It looks great. It looks great. All the products are great. The hats are great. The shirts are great. The supplements are great. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Now, speaking of being tomorrow's news today, yesterday I spent an hour or so talking about the Young Republicans drama. And it had sort of, you know, been making waves that day, but then it really blew up today and everybody's talking about today and it's the biggest story on X today. And if you want to know how I feel about it, just go back to yesterday because we already covered all this. So everybody else is again playing catch up here, but I still have more information to stay out on, you know, ahead of everybody else and in the front. And it's actually a fascinating and I think symbolic conflict taking place here. There's a competition going on. There's a giant psyop being waged against young people in the GOP. And of course, Politico's headline is all anybody knows about it. And it's not even true. And it's ridiculous how people are talking about this. And this is just what they do. This is what the left does. They just create a completely alternative reality where they demand that you condemn something that doesn't exist. And when you don't condemn the thing that doesn't exist, it's because you're a Nazi. And it's just, this is, it's exhausting. It's continuous. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's all the time. It's going to destroy our country. And it, I mean, it's very similar to the Trump very fine people hoax, right? Just utterly fraudulent, utterly fake, taking quotes completely out of context in a way that nobody would do honestly. It wasn't a mistake. It's not an accident. They are lying, but everybody believes the lie, and it's just endlessly frustrating. I'm sure 10 years from now, we'll still be hearing about some GOP rep somewhere who once said he loved Hitler. Just in case you missed the show yesterday, it's not that complicated. The phrase, I love Hitler, that was in the text messages, came as a response to somebody saying, whoever is most far right wins. Whoever's most far right will get the most votes. Oh, well, that's me because I love Hitler. Ha, ha, ha. It was a joke. It's hyperbolic. It's hyperbole. It's not serious. It is a joke. It is a joke specifically because it's such an outrageous thing to say. Do you understand that? Do you understand how sarcasm works, how exaggeration works? That it wouldn't be funny to say, oh, whoever's far right wins, then I don't even know. Somebody who's not as far right as Hitler. If the far right wins, then I'm going to be William J. Harrison. I was like, well, was he right wing? I don't get it. No, you choose the most explosive example. You choose the farthest right person to make the joke. Obviously. And like, okay, we're explaining jokes here. And this really does need to be the attitude because, again, even people on the right that seem to get it, they still don't get it. They still aren't getting the situation we're in. They're not getting how to react. They're still under this spell, this hypnosis of leftist projection. They still feel, they still get nervous. You can see it. They get all, ooh, I don't know exactly. Well, I don't want to condemn it, but I don't. But I think this is a nuance. It's like, guys, come on. Y'all. I will instruct you. I will hold your hand. I will walk you through this now. And God bless them. I got no hate for these people. People like Andrew Colvett, who's sort of replacing Charlie Kirk in a lot of ways. He was Charlie Kirk's right-hand man. Now, he didn't condemn this, which is good. He's taking the J.D. Vance tack. But listen to this just weirdo leftist child trying to stand on a soapbox and talk down to Andrew Colvett because he refuses to condemn this. We'll go to clip number one here. And in a way, it's like you're inviting this with your timidity. You're inviting this with your lack of confidence, your lack of assertion. You have to own this and you have to impose upon them. It is what I keep telling everybody. And I said it when Charlie Kirk got assassinated, that this is a time not to be shy, not to whisper, maybe you shouldn't, celebrate the murder. No, now is the time to go. You're saying a father of two should be murdered in public because of what he said? You are disgusting and you need to apologize. Oh, but No. No, I'm right here. You're wrong and you know it. You need to think about what you've said and get out of here because you're making all of us uncomfortable. Like that, you need to have that attitude. Okay, not their permission. It's all a con. It's all a fraud. They're con men, confidence men. That's where that word comes from. They impose upon you with confidence. They project on you the things they believe. And us on the right side, we're self-conscious about this. So we don't like, speaking down to people. They love it. They get off on it. We don't have to get off on it, but you have to smack them down with verve, with intensity. So, criticizing Andrew Colvett here, not because he didn't stand up for these people. He did. He just didn't do it in the way that it must be done because now this clip is going viral and is being spread all around. Oh my God, Charlie Kirk's producer refuses to condemn the young right Republicans. Oh no. Let's watch.
Listen, there has been a trend of, I think, let's just say, let's be gracious and say, in the era of Trump, maybe it's a reaction to Trump. I'm open to those discussions. But there is a justification for political violence. It shows up in every poll, and it's coming from progressives.
I have spent all of my formative years watching the President of the United States talk about the opposition party like they shouldn't exist. His claim to fame in U.S. politics... His claim to fame in U.S. politics was saying that Obama wasn't born in America. That is how he entered the political stage. He was famous before that, but that was his claim to fame. He was the first presidential candidate to ever chant, lock her up on a political stage. He tried to coup our government. Well, and I live in this, let me finish. Listen. I live in the city of Chicago. Donald Trump, over the past 2 months, has not only posted an AI video of Obama being arrested, but then after that, he posted an AI image of Chicago being invaded. After that, he sent the National Guard to Chicago. So I've spent my formative years watching the president do this, and just think about this. We saw these Nazi group chats, which I'm sure you condemn, right? This Nazi group chat.
Well, we can talk about it.
Do you condemn it?
I want to talk about it.
Wait, so when they said gas chambers,
disavow
when they say gas chambers, you won't, so you're like J.D. Vance, you just won't condemn this?
Well, I actually had J.D. on the show today. We had a whole conversation.
You guys can all condemn this, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hold on.
All right.
Chris, can you condemn that?
Here's the point, of course, but that's easy. What's happening here, and I know both of you guys, and I want to bring Joe in on this, and I want to get to the audience, but let's just be clear about where the path is forward. The comparison of which is worse is killing us, okay? It's killing everybody. And you are not wrong about...
The comparison of which is worse is killing us? There's no comparison. Edgy dudes making edgy comments in their private group chat that they don't mean and aren't serious about and are obviously only being said because of their, you know, hyperbolic nature, their exaggerated nature, is completely different and incomparable to leftists genuinely celebrating the murder of Charlie Kirk. He's like, the comparison's, there is no comparison. You people are murderous psychos. Our guys have edgy jokes. What is the comparison? Which is worse? Oh, there's a comparison of which is worse? No, you are worse. There is no comparison. So you just saw this kind of like ugly little weirdo Democrat slug just sort of rambling on and gish-galloping about a bunch of stuff that doesn't exist. That doesn't exist and isn't real and is just like in his fevered imagination. He has no idea. He just has no idea what he's talking about, and this only works with people who equally have no idea what they're talking about. He thinks that Trump's first foray into politics was Obama's birth certificate. Obama was elected in 2008, even though Trump ran under the Reform Party in 2000. This kid doesn't know anything. This kid doesn't know anything. He's literally like, you know, speaking down to somebody, and everything he's saying is just utter nonsense. Who came up with the idea that Obama wasn't born in America? First of all, it's actually true. He wasn't, and his birth certificate is a fraud. That's provable, and we've shown the video over and over and over again. You can go download the PDF yourself and see that the thing was created in Photoshop when it was released, not when Obama was born. And you can find the actual original birth certificate that was altered to make it look like Obama's. So first of all, it's just actually true that Obama was born in a different country, and that matters. If the president of the United States lied about his birth certificate to get elected, that's blackmail on him. I mean, I don't have to explain this, but this kid's an idiot. Hillary Clinton is the one who made it an issue in 2008. Donald Trump also talked about it because it was actually true, but that wasn't in any way his first foray into politics. This kid's an idiot. Talking about lock her up. Well, they actually locked up Donald Trump. They actually tried to lock him up and took a mugshot of him, and he didn't actually go after Hillary Clinton, even though he should have. And he says, he talks about the opposition party like it shouldn't exist. He's literally just making things up. He's just asserting things that aren't true. And Andrew Colvett, God bless him, is like, well, we can talk about it. When some weird little twerp Democrat who just spent 3 minutes lying as fast as he can says, do you condemn the Nazi chat? The correct answer is to laugh in his face and go, the Nazi chat? What, the jokes? You want me to condemn jokes? You little girl? No, I'm not going to condemn the jokes. Will you condemn jokes? Will you condemn Jon Stewart for telling jokes on The Daily Show? No, I'm not going to condemn it. There's nothing to condemn. It doesn't exist. The Nazi chat. The jokes from Republicans. Get over it.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay what, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, Infowars.com/show, band.video. Follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Infowars at Infowars. Of course, make sure you're following at HAN Live and at Real Alex Jones. And do make sure you're following those because Infowars may not be long for this world and you're going to want to have a place to find us. And of course, you can download the app at AlexJonesApp.com. Now I'm going to welcome Ian Carroll to the show in just a second, but the press conference that Trump was just holding in the Oval Office, apparently they asked about John Bolton being indicted as it did break as he was live. And here's his immediate response to it. Let's watch.
Senator John Bolton was just indicted by a grand jury in Maryland. Do you have a reaction to that?
I didn't know that. You tell me for the first time, but I think he's, you know, a bad person. I think he's a bad guy. Yeah, he's a bad guy. It's too bad, but it's the way it goes.
That was awesome. That was like the most Trumpian response I've ever heard. You're telling me this for the first time. That's how it goes, man. You shouldn't be a bad person. Hey, I guess you shouldn't be a bad person. What are you going to say? Incredible stuff. With that, very happy to welcome my guest, Ian Carroll. You can, of course, follow him on X at Ian Carroll Show. CancelIanCarroll.com is the website. And, of course, he's on YouTube as well at Ian Carroll Show. Ian, how are you, sir?
Really good. Good to see you, Harrison.
Very good to see you. What are you even up to these days? It's like every time I hear about you, you're working on 15,000 different things. I'm interviewing IMA. She's like, well, I'm doing this thing with my friend Ian. I'm like, how is he involved in everything? What are you focusing on right now?
Right now I'm focusing on launching the buyer app. My whole platform started with going to the grocery stores and looking at who owns all the products on the shelves. And I was doing research into, like, basically BlackRock owns everything, but looking for family and founder owned brands. And eventually some guys reached out and we built an app and it's almost ready to launch. So now you can use this app to go into the store and find out who owns the products that you're buying and who owns them and where your money's really going, as well as like what's in them and everything else. So I'm super stoked on that and have my head in that a lot right now. As well as trying to keep up on all the news and, whether, I don't know if we're, you know, chronicling the outbreak of peace in the world or whether we're chronicling the outbreak of World War III.
Right.
It changes every day.
Yeah, I know. I'm constantly being thrown for a loop. It's like white pills one day, black pills the next. The buyer app, I know you've been talking about for a while. I think that's going to be huge. And it already is huge. And I've been showing stories, and really there's like one every day now, of these major corporations that are voluntarily choosing to like take our artificial dyes out of their food or like make, you know, beef tallow instead of the corn syrup stuff. Like MAHA is having an even bigger impact culturally than it is politically, isn't it?
Yeah, and culturally is the way to have the impact. Like boycotting works. There's a reason why companies are so scared of boycotting and they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to encourage it. And buyer's not just about boycotting, but it gives that power of the purchase to the consumer, because the only thing stopping us, like we're all connected, we're all on the phones, we're all talking on social media, and we've seen powerful boycotting campaigns completely change corporate dynamics many times in the last couple of years. And the only thing stopping people from like leveraging their purchasing power for what it is really worth is just information. And so the point of buyer is not to tell anyone how to think, but just to give everyone all the information you need in order to really understand who's selling you everything so that you can just, you know, send your dollars where you want them to go. And it's important to talk politics. It's important to be engaged in politics and sort of these big solutions. But at the same time, it often feels these days like the only solutions that actually work are bottom up, are us leveraging our own power on an individual scale. And then the network effect of all of us doing that together, even when it's for our own interests, generally regular people's interests are aligned with regular people's interests. So I'm really excited to sort of empower regular people to just know what they're buying and who is selling it.
It just seems like it's going to be such a,
a resource saver. I know my wife, I mean, just spends so much of her time like trying to research like what products really are and whether this is safe or that is safe. Man, if you could just have
an app. It's a quick barcode scan.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. That'll save hours and hours and hours a week of time that's spent just trying to avoid being poisoned constantly. So I think that's going to be hugely successful. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about so much more. I want to get into where you've landed on Charlie Kirk's assassination. I know you've been keeping up with that quite a bit.
Yep.
As well as 1,000 other things we'll get into. Ian Carroll stays with us for the hour. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Yes, folks, we're streaming on X at InfoWars, at Real Alex Jones, at War Room Show, and of course, InfoWars.com/show. My guest is Ian Carroll. You can find him on X at Ian Carroll Show, cancelIanCarroll.com, and on YouTube as well at Ian Carroll Show there also. And it seems like the talk of the day today is this young Republican group chat. And I think this is very symbolic of the old guard kind of trying to stick to the old way of doing things, the old conservative attitude, and resisting moving on to the next generation that's a little bit edgier, that doesn't care quite as much what their enemies think about them. Have you been following this at all?
Yeah, I have. Not in any great depth because it doesn't feel like a very deep story to me. It feels like more partisan hit piece politics, that's just kind of meant to distract and flame tensions. And it is just feels like a giant nothing burger to me. It's like these people have clearly never talked to 20 something year olds and never been in a group chat with a bunch of dudes. But you know, whatever, people got to be outraged about something. I think that the responses and the back and forth of, you know, everyone in the media is actually a lot more interesting than the group chats themselves.
Right. Well, and again, I think it's like a dividing line. It's sort of become a litmus test where like, if you are apologizing for this, if you're groveling at the feet of your enemies, you're lost, man. Like you need to be left on the side of the road as we charge forward. And it's not about we're now Nazis. It's just like, this is all fabricated. It's all nonsense. They don't really care. So why are you feeding into it? And it's just infuriating. And it seems like, sorry, but it seems like the boomers are just clinging on to power. And I've been talking to some people 100%. Sort of behind the scenes, and that really is happening, where the old school GOP sort of moneyed boomers are trying to force out the young people that didn't even have anything to do with this, but they basically are embarrassed by the whole thing and just want everybody out so they can bring in sort of rhino people that support Black Lives Matter but are still technically Republican. And the young people are resisting it. And there's this sort of behind the scenes battle going on that I wonder if it's ever going to break out, you know, into the open, in a bigger way. But then it also brings up the question of like the right and the left is kind of getting blurred at this point. What is your take on that? Because I see so many people saying, you know, this is an opportunity. The left and the right are really aligned on a lot of stuff. But then I look over the left and they're telling me to castrate my child and, you know, all this other good. They hate white men. It's like, well, how are we supposed to bridge that gap? Do you think there's any hope for unification between the left and the right now?
Not with the extremes, no. But with, you know, the sane and rational middles of both sides, absolutely. I think that we're more unified in the like the 80% middle than we've ever been in our lives. And I think that stories like Jeffrey Epstein and the war in Gaza and the technocrats taking everything over, I think those all align in the same way. And I think you're totally right about the boomer generation, the old guard, the old boys club, trying to hold on to power. And we're seeing that story reiterated over and over and over again. And I would argue that the turning point story, the Charlie Kirk story, is a very similar story, actually, right, where Charlie is this younger kid, like, he's not a kid, but he's definitely younger than all them. And he's interfacing with even younger kids almost as a canary in the coal mine. And the canary starts coming up being like, hey, this isn't working with the kids anymore. I can't keep doing this. It's not going to work. And when we started to see how the donors were pushing back on that, there's this sort of denial of reality, as though like this older generation thinks that they can just stick their hands in their ears and their head in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. But ultimately, the whole world is changing all around them. And it's only a matter of maybe 5 to 10 years before the change is just natural law. But we're seeing a bunch of sort of versions of it rearing its head right now. Whether it's these group chats and, like, you know, the conversation around the language in them, or it's Charlie talking about the donors and talking about what college kids are talking about and asking, over and over and over. I mean, even just the dynamic between like the Nick Fuentes right and like the Tucker Carlson right. It sort of is, subtly visible in all aspects of politics right now.
And it all, for some reason, always ties back to Israel. And it's like, it's almost frustrating, because it's like, I don't want this to always be about Israel, but, you know, I'm talking to a couple people behind the scenes about sort of what was going on with the young Republicans. And I'm like, where did this beef start? Like, what is this all about actually? And they're like, well, Gavin Wax is a Zionist and he was trying to be sort of displaced by non-Zionist people. And it's like, really? This also. So this as well. So the Charlie Kirk thing is about Israel. Jeffrey Epstein's about Israel. Gaza, obviously, and Trump and Iran. And that goes back to Israel. It's just like, this just seems like a thorn in our side, or it just seems like at the root of all of this, it always goes back to Zionism for some reason. I don't want to be talking about this. Why does it always go back to that?
Well, I mean, if you analyze the situation, honestly, either Israel is trying to influence American politics to, you know, boost support for Israel, or they're not. And if you want to argue that Israel is not trying to boost support for Israel in America, I don't know what planet you live on.
Right.
I think the more content, like the question that people kind of argue over is whether that's a good thing or it's a bad thing. But like, it's undeniable that they are extremely invested in affecting America's opinion of Israel. And so basically that's a propaganda campaign targeting Americans. And if you are running a propaganda campaign targeting Americans and your entire nation's survival basically depends on the continued support of conservative Americans, that is the kind of situation where you have to maintain power. It's like you're wrestling with someone and they have a weapon and you're trying to control that right. weapon to keep them from harming you. And you have to do everything you can to keep that weapon from getting free. And that's kind of the behavior that we're seeing. And that's why it pops up everywhere, because any potential opening is a leak in the dam that could crack the whole thing. Like, you can't have the turning point stage, you know, platforming anti-Israel opinions, because what'll happen when all the kids start hearing that and everyone starts talking about it? You can't have these young Republicans taking over, because then this whole organization is going to flip on Israel. You know, that mindset, whether true or not, it's really obvious to see how Zionists might see that as an existential threat and as a sort of like crack in the dam kind of a moment of keep it all down. And so I think by the nature of the situation, you imply that it will show up everywhere, because everything on the right wing has sort of been built, not literally, but just about everything on the right wing has been built up on Zionist money to promote the Zionist version of the right wing, kind of like the Judeo-Christian version of Christianity. And so it just inherently is baked into the entire cake. And I think that there's no, like, we haven't had such an overt confrontation with that truth until the war in Gaza, and specifically Trump's presidency, that is just more of the same. So it's just really in our faces.
Yeah, it's really hard to ignore. And that, you know, to me was the really interesting thing about some of the text messages Candace Owens was coming out with. No matter who you believe killed Charlie Kirk, you got to see behind the scenes at what a pressure campaign looked like, what influences these high powered sort of right wingers have to deal with and have to try to balance and have to worry about, all right, I'm losing credibility here, but I'll lose money if I don't go with that. And it's obvious that people are being restricted and guided in ways they don't want to go. And it's unfortunate. Where did you land on, I mean, are you still investigating the Charlie Kirk assassination? It seems like there's new stuff coming out continuously. Some of it, I don't know how serious it is or whether to take it that seriously. I know I talked to you a little bit about the Google search results that have come up, which I was sort of looking at, and I was kind of going, well, this could be something. It could not be. I'll look into this later. And then I see that apparently Google went into their back end and like deleted all of the results. So you can't even find them anymore. So now I'm like, okay, this must have been something because they wouldn't go in and delete this if it didn't happen. So can you explain what that is about and what these Google searches are?
Yeah. So I forget the guy's name, the original account. I wish I remembered it. Maybe your guys have a clip to pull up.
He
finds this Google search term about the Losee Center or Tyler Robinson, you know, one of these very specific phrases that is about this shooting. And he's looking at Google search terms of, you know, when were people searching this? And he happens to notice that Washington DC, if you, cause in Google search, you know, analysis, you can shrink your query and look at really specific search data. And he shrinks it down to just look at District of Columbia. And he notices that like Tyler Robinson was Google searched specifically in District of Columbia enough times to make a significant blip on the map, like a month before Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Or I guess Tyler Robinson's might have been a few days before the assassination, because he started Googling all these, looking up all these different terms, Losee Center, Tyler Robinson, the name of the hospital, the name of the construction company that redid the whole scene, all these little terms that are very specific to this crime that no one would have known about or been thinking about, especially in Washington DC ahead of the crime. And he finds all of these data points where there's this huge spike in search data before the assassination happened. Right. So there he is, Real Baron Podcast. And he publishes this and he does at least one. I don't know if he did more than one, but he did at least one of these searches live just to show us. He looked up, I think, the Mauser rifle. I think he looked up Mauser 30-06 or something like that. And he showed live on his video on stream that there's the blip and it is before the killing. And he was just testing a new term. He didn't even know if it would be there, but it was. But, then all the search data seems to get deleted. So we can't double check that it was all real, which is unfortunate. It doesn't disprove it, but it makes it hard to double check. But since the initial reporting, he and other people have been looking up other search terms and finding other spikes of a search term. Like, for example, the construction company that paved over the whole crime scene that got searched in DC. I think it might have been in Israel. There's like these spikes in Israel and in DC, which is super sketchy.
And nowhere
and
else.
So that one got discovered later, and then that one also got wiped like that day. So it seems like there's something going on where they're watching that reporting and they're clearing out the search data for everything that was searched around that. I don't know how to come up with an innocuous explanation for it. Data doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Right? It can be confusing and misleading, but that's pretty specific data.
Yeah. So it was these search terms that nobody would have searched, really, certainly not with the, you know, all in the same place at the same time, and it's only DC and only Israel where it pops up. So it's not like they were searching DC to see if anybody and elsewhere they were also searching. No, it was like nobody in the country searched this term, the name of the surgeon or the name of the hospital, except little spikes like 2 months before the assassination in DC and Israel. And it's very suspicious. This is from Project Constitution on X, and they, you know, did a breakdown of this, but he said, I fired up Google Trends for Precision Marble and Granite LLC, which is that the company that paved over the crime scene. Boom, massive U.S. spike right around June 20th, syncing perfectly with the Israel/DC recon blitz. Snapped a mobile screenshot, ironclad evidence of foreknowledge, switched to desktop for a clean side-by-side like all my other dumps. Poof, zero results, zilch. Tried phone again, gone. Had a third-party buddy verify on their device, same thing, black hole, no data. He says this isn't a glitch, it's live deletion. Google, or CIA Mossad string pullers, wiping Trends data the second we go viral. So he's saying that he searches this, gets a result, and then the instant he gets the result, he can't do it again. He goes to another computer and it doesn't show up. So this is very, very suspicious. Again, maybe it wasn't suspicious before, but who has the power to delete these results in live time? And I haven't seen anybody come up with a good technical answer of how this could just happen, as you say, innocuously or, you know, without some sort of nefarious activity behind this.
I mean, his wording in the post actually sort of misrepresents what he says happened in a way that is sort of significant too. He describes what you just read, that he finds the search term, takes a screenshot, and then goes to do another, you know, screen recording of it, and then it's gone. In the wording here, he says that they delete these things after we go viral. But what he's just described is not that. He's described them deleting it while he is the only one that's aware that he's found it. While he has just searched it and it has just been found is what he seems to describe. Now, I suspect that this whole tweet was written by AI just from the language of it being written, which doesn't mean that it's all lies. It just means that I think he was using it for verbiage. So it's possible there's some miscommunication in terms of the actual wording of the post, but he seems to be describing like live surveillance of these search terms and then active deletion the moment one is searched, which is weird. That doesn't really make like, you know, if you were live surveilling all the search terms that you know are suspicious, you'd think you would just delete them all instead of surveilling them.
Right.
So I'm a little confused by his posts on that one in specific, but there's, you know, there seems to be a lot of smoke coming out somewhere here. And so it feels like there's probably some fire. And again, this is where like you asked where I'm at with the investigation. And you're right that so much has happened and it's like there's still stuff coming out and it's kind of hard to tell like what was debunked and what are we still looking at and what's the chances and what does everyone think now. And it is always important to rewind and remember like what do we still know from the start and what is still just true that is unanswered and in the air. And the most obvious one is what you put out. And then we're super vindicated on is that you put out this really controversial tweet where someone close to Charlie had said to you a month before that Charlie had been saying that he was afraid that Israel would try to kill him if he turned on them. And that seemed like this crazy out there tweet to a lot of people when you posted it. And then especially the day of the shooting, and it became this whole big conspiracy theory and people were calling you a liar and all this stuff. And then you were corroborated not by one other person, but by two other sources, very high quality journalists, Max Blumenthal and Candace Owens. And some of that reporting, basically, like Candace is saying that she has three different sources talking about Charlie saying those sorts of things. Max is saying that he has three to five sources. And so it's one of like it's extremely corroborated at this point, and that's like one of these statements that is easy to lose it in the river of information that's coming down and forget that that sort of is a core piece of what's happening here. But that is still this wide open unanswered question. I don't give a shit about the Young Republicans group chats because I'm still wondering about the Charlie Kirk group chat where he said I need to abandon the pro-Israel cause. We haven't heard Turning Point USA make any statements about that. We haven't heard them address that at all. We haven't heard them say if they're going to do that or why they're choosing to not follow through on what was apparently one of Charlie's last convictions. I don't know what to do with that, but it's real. And it's pretty well corroborated at this point.
Well, you know, TVUSA did respond, or at least Andrew Colvitt did respond to confirm that that text chain was legit. and interestingly, tell me if I have this wrong. It sounded to me like he said, I know it's true because I took that screenshot. Andrew Colvitt said, I sent that screenshot into the FBI when they were asking us about who may have had motive for killing Charlie. So it sounds like he was sort of admitting, yeah, we also suspected Israel. And so we sent in this stuff to the FBI.
There's a bit of subtlety in what you just said, though, is that Colvitt said I had also like passed around that screenshot, which doesn't really make clear if that means that he's the one that actually like had the phone, screenshotted the thing, and then sent it to everyone, including Candace. I don't think that's what he's implying. I think that what his words meant is that I was in that chat and I have screenshotted that exact piece because it's so spicy, and I had sent it to the FBI and these other things for what I thought was the right thing to do, and implying that someone else sent it to Candace because other people must have also screenshotted it, I think is what's implied there, which is, you know, same, but subtle. But you're absolutely right that he did claim that he sent it to law enforcement right away, which implies that he had questions as well. And I don't know. I've been wondering from the very start. I was looking very closely at Erica Kirk and at TPUSA people to see if they were going to condemn the whole conversation around Israel. Are they going to come out and say, Candace is crazy, you're crazy, we're all crazy? And they didn't really do that. And furthermore, there's some donors, not the Jewish ones, but there's other donors. And there's other people on the inside that are reaching out and leaking things and getting involved in like making sure that that part of the story doesn't die, because I think naturally everyone is extremely suspicious. Right now, the investigation is sort of dead-ended into the FBI doing their own thing behind closed doors and all the information that we have in the public square being hard to match up to Tyler Robinson and a .30-06 rifle from the Losi Center. But it's not impossible, not entirely impossible anyways. And so we're sort of in this waiting period where basically a bunch of ballistics experts on YouTube are carefully and systematically analyzing the crime scene, doing aerial surveys, analyzing all the video evidence that we have and having a really interesting complex discussion online about the quality of evidence, what the evidence shows, what different theories might or might not line up. So it's been really cool to kind of watch the experts work and follow along with them and report on what they're coming up with.
Yeah, and I mean, Candace Owens has been doing really, really an incredible job, you know, exposing all of this and coming out with all of this. And, you know, she said, the only people that can stop me, she mentioned somebody, but then she said Erica Kirk. She said, you know, if Erica Kirk tells me not to do this, then I won't do it.
It was her husband and Erica Kirk.
So there you go. So obviously they haven't told her to stop. So, you know, just sort of de facto approval of what she's looking into, and she's got the receipts.
Let's analyze that for just a second, actually, because this is the first time that I've kind of put these two thoughts together that we've been talking about here. Is we know that the text message from Charlie that he's saying he had to abandon the pro-Israel cause is real. Andrew Colvett confirmed that. So his wife knew it was real. Right. His wife saw those exact pressures and struggles more than anyone else. If there's anyone in the world that feels Charlie's the pressure and the pain that Charlie was under and might be a little resentful of the way that Charlie was being treated, it should be his wife. His wife should be the first person that is, you know, wanting to push back on people that are being mean to Charlie. And so I can only imagine that Erica Kirk should know exactly how Charlie felt and should probably share a lot of those sentiments. And so that implies that she is based.
Right.
Right? And if she's not, like, if there's any version of the story where Erica is not on that page, then it's like, well, shit, now we're talking Erica Kirk conspiracies, because you're married to the man. He's the love of your life. You have the most amazing love story ever. You're raising kids together. He tells you everything. By all accounts, you guys were the closest ever. And he was clearly going through this, and you clearly saw them pressuring him, and you're a loyal, you know, Christian wife. And so from all indications, Erica, the new CEO of Turning Point USA, gets it and knows what Charlie was going through and is very much on the side of investigate all the leads, I would assume, because she hasn't condemned it yet and she knows everything. And the only situation where I can imagine her going against that perspective of Charlie's would be where she was like some freaking secret agent or something, which is not something I suspect is true. Although those theories are floating around.
Yeah, I don't suspect that either. I think people overestimate the likelihood that people are living double lives and just completely dishonest about literally everything, and they have kids with somebody they don't really love. It's just like, stop that. You know, that to me is too far. But, you know, when she gave her first address where she says, you know, to the people who killed Charlie Kirk, like, your day is coming, and it was like really, you know.
Notice the language.
You know, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, she knows. She knows and she's aware and she's talking straight to him.
Yeah, she spoke in the plural.
Yeah.
She specifically said these people, right? She did not single out Tyler Robinson. She didn't say his name. She didn't say the shooter. Like, she did say the young man when she said, I forgive you. But she was using this intentionally very vague language that, like, it was hard not to notice that all that language applies to any old shooter. It applies to any old situation. And she used the plural multiple times. I'm not super optimistic that we're going to actually get results from Turning Point or from the FBI, because ultimately now Erica is under all that pressure. Now Charlie's legacy is at threat of being taken away from Erica and whoever she's aligned with in there. Like, she's now in the thick of that exact battle. And I can only imagine, though she seems incredibly prepared to take it over, she's not as prepared as Charlie Kirk was. So there's definitely some stuff going on inside Turning Point, and I think we're all pretty curious what's the scoop, what's the tea, and what's going to fall out of there when it gets shook.
And of course, the only people coming out with new information are you guys, are Candace Owens and you and, you know, Ryan Matta and the people doing this research. I haven't heard anything from the FBI. I'm pretty sure to this date, the last thing we heard from the FBI was the text messages that nobody even believes in the first place. Yeah. So, you know, if they're...
It's because we're also hateful. You just have to be more hateful. You just have to hate people. And that's how you, you know, get to the bottom of things.
Well, maybe I'll work on that. More with Ian Carroll on the other side. Follow Ian on X at Ian Carroll Show. Cancel IanCarroll.com. YouTube at Ian Carroll Show. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. Short commercial break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Chase.
Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
I just recommend people, personal relationship with God, praying to God, saying, I want to be good. I want to recognize truth. I want to know what truth is. I want to open myself up to you. I'm an imperfect. I repent for what I've done, and I want you to cleanse me and then show me the truth and then show me how to be a better person and then show me after that what the mission is you have for me. And literally, if you do that through a process, it may take days, may take months, may take years, then the adventure begins, and then all of a sudden you're being given like intel and stuff, like, and like literally just, you have to learn to go with it. It's never wrong, and it's God, and it's there, and it's your personal relationship. And then obviously people get this relationship, they all want to teach other people it, and God says get together in groups, that's great. But Christ didn't try to go get the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the priest class to join him. He said their minds were closed. He went to the prostitutes and the tax collectors and the robbers, the thieves, because they were already outcast. But that's where he found people that were already under evil's control but weren't arrogant about it, who were looking for a way out. And so, I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to, is a spiritual relationship with God. And there are some real churches and things.
But don't you find that? I know I have found that. You see sparks of this in the most unlikely people. If you put a list on paper of the people in your life, I won't ask you to say it out loud, but who you really trust, or you talk to and you groove with them and they like know exactly what you're saying. You know, they are on the same wavelength in some deep way. It's not the people you would expect. Have you ever noticed that?
Absolutely. Most people get into media because they want to be movie stars. Most people become a preacher because they want to, you know, because they want to be famous and have power. And then you'll find like just the most just normal, unassuming person that has all this great knowledge.
Yes.
Because they already have all the power. They don't need power. And so it's just
they're connected to God's power. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. And it's quite the quest because so many people are lost, and really it's an inside job. They've got to somehow open up the channel to God. And then they'll see everything that's happening. And then God will give them a message and a mission of what they should do. And I don't want to say all churches are bad, because there's a lot of good people in the churches regardless. It's just that the last 120 years, the Rockefeller Foundation, the ecumenical movement, and all of that has really moved into the churches. We see that with all the rainbow flags and all, you know, the famous cathedrals in England now festooned with all the leftists, you know, graffiti and garbage. I mean, it's been captured, is my point.
God is gay.
But people can't get turned off by that and say, well, God's dead. No, no. Satan has occupied the so-called temples. But God isn't in the temple. God is inside us.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
The crew is teasing Ian Carroll. I don't approve of this. I don't approve of it at all. Ian Carroll is my guest. Ian Carroll Show on X, cancelIanCarroll.com, YouTube, Ian Carroll Show as well. And you brought up something during the break that I am glad you brought up, because I have not had time to look into this, but you're telling the crew that you spent all morning with your head in the Russian JFK dossier. So apparently Russia had a dossier on JFK that they released through Anna Paulina Luna, if I have that right. It has now been published. You've had a chance to look at it. What is this? Give us the background and tell us what's in it.
Yeah, well, first off, what is it when we have a foreign nation giving documents that are being released on Twitter through this, like, single congresswoman? It's a funny way to get these kinds of documents, and for a foreign nation to tell us about our own presidential assassination.
Right.
But kind of a nothing burger. I think we all sort of expected nothing to come of it. There is a lot of interesting information in them, and I'll kind of break it down a little bit, but it's not like it solved the case or anything like that. It basically is just stuff that sort of absolves Russia of guilt. And, you know, obviously you should be a little suspicious of Russia providing information that absolves Russia of guilt, but it is pretty well documented. So it's like 380 some pages, basically all in Russian. There's a whole bunch of sources in there. There's a whole bunch of old photographs and exhibits in there. There's letters, handwritten notes, and stuff like that. And it's basically just a compilation of all of their related intelligence about Lee Harvey Oswald, JFK, JFK's relationship with Russia, every communication that happened in the immediate aftermath of JFK's death, and a couple of other sort of related tangential investigations and ideas. And so what I did, because I don't speak Russian, and it's a lot of pages, is I basically wrote a big AI script that organized it all, translated it all, and then scraped through and sort of like categorized each section and broke it down so that I could look at each section one thing at a time, and specifically looking for any new information. Is there anything new that we didn't already know in the public domain that is contained in these documents? There's a fair bit of surveillance information about Lee Harvey Oswald. If anyone's not familiar, Lee Harvey Oswald, the patsy that they said killed JFK, he was selected as the patsy because he was sort of a mentally unstable sort of CIA officer, because he had worked with CIA in some way, but often with CIA people, they're sort of halfway in, halfway out, because they're kind of working undercover and sort of being double agents. And it's always a little unclear with these kinds of people who they really worked for. And that's perfect, because Lee Harvey Oswald was sort of close enough that they could surveil him, they could send him places, they could assign him places, but he was also far enough away that they could be like, look, he was a Soviet defector. And he had been apparently tasked with either infiltrating on behalf of the American government, the Cuban and Soviet, like socialist kind of groups, or he had genuinely been a socialist that was trying to defect from the USA and go join those groups. And there's discrepancies and people argue about that still. But Russia was surveilling him, and they have documentation about his application to be a Soviet citizen. They have documentation about an apparent suicide attempt that he, did when he was in Russia. He was assigned to work in Russia while he was there, and they have some interesting documentation about how he was paid his standard salary, but he was also paid an extra amount every month. And then he was also receiving a bunch of rubles to pay for his accommodation, which seems to imply that basically he was put up in a place where they could keep an extra close watch on him, because he was trying to say, I want to join Russia, I'm defecting from the US, I'm on your team. And they were kind of like, we don't buy it. And there's a really interesting, one of the more significant new things that comes up in the report that's never really been disclosed or talked about before, is that apparently Lee Harvey Oswald had written a number of handwritten letters to the USSR asking for citizenship and stuff like that. And those are included in the report. But apparently on November 9th, 1963, he wrote a typed letter to the Soviet Union right before JFK gets shot. That's basically this whole like, it's like another request for citizenship, but the Soviets in this documentation, if we're to believe it all, they say that because it was typed when none of his other letters were, and the wording in it was like really suspicious to them, and they thought it was basically trolling to like hook them into something that they weren't sure what it was. And then like days later, JFK gets shot and they're like, whoa, that's weird. So it seems like the Soviet intelligence perspective on this November 9th letter is that it was probably not written by Lee Harvey Oswald and was instead basically forged to try to incriminate Russia and Lee Harvey Oswald as the factions behind the shooting. That's not substantiated. That's just their assessment of the intelligence. And it is, you know, intelligence officials making that assessment. But it's really interesting to kind of dig into the wording of it and how they analyzed it and all that. There's also a bunch of documentation about exactly what conversations happened in, like, in the Kremlin and in the higher levels of Soviet government right when the shooting happened. And it's pretty clear from all of the documented conversations, memos, emails, like cables that went back and forth, that they were immediately like, oh fuck, we're going to get blamed for this. A, did we have anything to do with it? Like, was this some secret, like, you know, black budget program in the KGB that we don't know about? Figure that out right away. And then when they looked into that and found out that that was not the case, they were basically like, okay, immediately, like, we need to reach out to America, reach out to the Kennedys, apologize, condolences, share everything we've got with them, because they were, it's like we as Americans are propagandized to think of the USSR as this like big boogeyman that wanted to end the world. But over and over again, throughout much of the USSR's history, the actual correspondences from their leadership was more like, oh shit, we don't want nuclear war. What can we do to stop nuclear war?
Right.
And that is, again, the kind of the story in these documents. And I'm not saying that like all the Soviets were wonderful, but it is really interesting to see how they responded like to the minute, to the actual assassination. But other than that, there's really not a lot in it. I did search specifically for Israel just for the heck of it. And Israel was mentioned a number of times, but only kind of in passing, not in any sort of conspiratorial or they had any involvement way. And there wasn't really anything new that we don't already know, aside from sort of like intrigue about Lee Harvey Oswald's time in Russia and Russia's interactions with him.
Okay, because I'd seen some rumors that there were like some pretty explosive things in here, but you didn't see anything about like a second shooter. I saw a report that the Russia thought that the FBI thought that there were two shooters, something like that, but nothing.
You know, it is possible. It is possible that that's in there because there's severe limitations to how you analyze such things, and we all sort of choose our own way to analyze it. If I was a Russian speaker, obviously I'd be a million times more equipped to break this down. So right now I'm having to rely on AI's organization of it, translation of it, and then I basically did a bunch of prompting to have AI help pick out the important sections that I should look at more closely. But there's a lot of sections that I have not personally scrutinized yet as well. So it's the kind of thing where anytime there's these new document breaks, especially with these giant documents that no one could ever take the time to read all of it so fast, is it's important to have multiple eyes looking on it and multiple people kind of analyzing everything to double check each other. Because I haven't seen that yet, but it's very possible that it's in there. The way that the documents, like the way the USSR's correspondences are structured, that's, I totally believe that they would have their own intelligence reports in there about the investigation, about what was sort of being surmised, because they were extremely concerned with who was getting blamed and was it going to get pinned on them and where's the investigation going and how can we avoid conflict with the U.S. over this.
Very, very, very interesting. Yeah. And of course, you know, it would make sense for them. And I think you know, cause I always got the feeling that when Oswald went over there, they sort of mistreated him a little bit and he was kind of pissed off. And of course, the way it was portrayed in historical documentaries, which I'm sure are biased and probably put out by the CIA in the first place, but I always got the impression that he sincerely wanted to go to Russia and they just thought he was a spy and just like kind of wouldn't let him really become Russian, but yep. Were more like, yeah, you can hang out here, you know, just in case we need to, you know, scoop you up as a hostage or something. Like they're willing to let him live there, but not willing to actually, you know, treat him like a real defector because they were suspicious that he was sent over. So yeah,
that's the interesting space that espionage lives in, really,
right.
That like we only ever as regular citizens, we only ever see that in like cinema, in movies, this sort of like gray area of like double agents and who do you work for and deal making. But like when you actually look up and research cases of espionage and intelligence agency operations and stuff, you more and more you start to realize that that is a very real phenomenon. And actually one of the best examples is Jeffrey Epstein. There's a lot of debate about who he worked for and whether he was sort of like a free agent that contracted out what he had or whether he was set up by Israel, for example, right from the start. And I don't think we know that for sure. But when you look at how he operated, it's very clear, or how his predecessor in certain ways, Robert Maxwell, operated. It's very clear that a lot of these sort of spies, even if you're a low-level dude, like Lee Harvey Oswald, you sort of live in this like gray area where if you're going to be useful to the American government that ostensibly hired you, you sort of need to not be affiliated with them. You need to go be undercover, so to speak. But then the moment you're undercover, you're sort of like need to be affiliated with this other group. But often they get so blurry and gray area. And Lee Harvey Oswald's relationship to USSR is, again, this funny kind of space where, like, he did work with the CIA in some capacity. Maybe he was a defector. It's hard to say. He seemed genuine in his desire to go and be involved in the socialist thing. But, like, I don't know. Then he was, like, back in Dallas and ostensibly – I actually don't remember. I one time looked up got deep into the rabbit hole of how he came to be in that place in Dallas at the time. And I thought that I had found that it was basically he was assigned to go there by his sort of CIA handlers. But I don't want to claim that too certainly without looking it up again. But it's just this funny gray area of intelligence agency operations being so similar to organized crime and like a blank allegiance to whoever's, you know, giving you anonymous orders, that it gets so confusing.
It gets very vague. And of course, you know, he was known for like being part of communist groups in New Orleans and handing out communist pamphlets. And it's like, okay, was that what he was really doing? Or was that him trying to ingratiate himself with the communists on behalf of the CIA? Or was it the New Orleans mob that had something to do with it? I mean, we're still dealing in the gray area of all of this, but something I've noticed, you know, along with this and a couple of other things, is there seem to be all of these back channels between Republicans and Russians that I'm noticing sort of make themselves known. Have you been following Kirill Dmitriev? He's the he's a special envoy to the U.S. from Russia. He's also the CEO of their sovereign wealth fund, and he's been making these kind of shocking statements on X, going, "Yeah, you know, the Trump and Russia are working together to defeat the New World Order, basically." And he's Q posting. Huh. He, I guess, is the one that's
no
been
way.
Literally. No, he's literally post like something will happen,
right.
And he'll post like a Q post and be like, "See, this is what's happening." Have you? And then you've
he
got
posted 52 minutes ago a story about Benny about John Bolton, and he just posted a storm emoji, which is a Q reference. The storm is coming.
So,
that's amazing. That's
have you been
hilarious.
Looking? And then the first lady Melania Trump came out and said, "I've been working with a back channel with Putin to save these kids." Anna Paulina Luna is working with the ambassador to release the JFK files, and it seems like from reading Kirill Dmitriev's, you know, Twitter post, he's kind of insinuating that like JFK was killed not by the Russians because he was anti-Russian, but because he was actually kind of working with the Russians to try to bring world peace. In fact, if the crew can bring in my computer,
that
in just
is what the
second.
Documents basically allude to. They basically show that the Russians were very in, they liked JFK a lot because he was the most like conversational and friendly of all U.S. presidents in recent history, and he was the only one that wanted to normalize relations. And so they were immediately like, they lost a potential ally to bring these nations back together and to heal this divide. And they were worried they were going to be blamed. But it's a super astute observation on your point. That's actually totally a thing that is it's antithesis to the narrative, right, of like Russia bad. But honestly, I'm super stoked on it. Like, that's exactly what I would like to see, is a more, you know, friendly world where we're getting along and cooperating.
Absolutely. Yeah, so there's the storm emoji. I mean, he posts like QAnon posts about this stuff, and he is saying it outright. He's saying, yeah, we are working together. And of course, when Putin was interviewed by Tucker, he kept saying, you know, well, you know, I've been around for a bunch of American presidents, and every single one I go to them and I say, hey, Russia's not communist anymore. We want to be just another European country. Why don't you welcome us in? Why don't we just be trade partners and friends? And the presidents always say, that's so true. What a great idea, Putin. I think we can work on that. Only to come back the next day and go, ugh. That's not happening.
Maybe we should coup your neighbor and start a war with you. That would be great.
Yeah, I think we're actually going to try to destroy everything you've built so far because the men in gray suits told us so. So it seems like this is a long, ongoing sort of phenomenon where the presidents of these countries are like, don't want to be at war, but the behind-the-scenes deep state is creating the conflict. This is from Kirill Dmitriev. He says, from the Soviet JFK docs released by Representative Luna, Kennedy, Khrushchev, world peace bridge could and should be built between Alaska and Russia at once with the modern boring company technology. This could be a Putin-Trump tunnel connecting the Eurasias and America for around $8 billion. So this seems to show that they were working together so well. They were talking about, you know, collaborating on infrastructure together, Kennedy and Khrushchev.
Yep. And that's a drawing from the time. It's super interesting to see and kind of tragic to see like what was taken from the world. Had JFK not been shot, where would we be today? You know, what would have changed? Hard to say, but you're so right. And it is interesting. It's hard not to kind of get very conspiratorial about this sort of, dualistic relationship that America has with Russia right now, where you're right that there's all these channels that seem to be open, all this friendly conversation and collaboration, while simultaneously like the war rages on in Ukraine and you know, Putin is supposed to be the devil for that. And I just can't help but wonder if it's not another just banker's trick of keep the wars going while we're actually all smoking cigars at tables together in fancy rooms, drinking cocktails and making money off of all these projects, and clear the land over there and start the project over there and keep the peasants fighting. It's hard not to go down that rabbit hole a little bit when you see the sort of duplicity of it all.
Yeah, it seems like there really is something going on behind. Like, I'm not full QAnon yet, but like when you've got, you know, the CEO of the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Russia, special envoy to America, very blatantly posting this, it's like maybe there's something to it. And funnily enough, I just saw Kirill Dmitriev retweeted Alex Jones on Tucker Carlson. So we're clearly on the same side here. And you hear Putin come out and talk about, you know, the Satanists that have taken over Western countries and seem to be at war with their own people. It's like, again, I'm not trying to be a Putin lover, Russophile guy, but he's right. But what am I supposed to say? He's telling the truth. So it's like something weird's going on here.
Honestly, I think that Putin would make a pretty mean InfoWars guest commentator for like an hour segment. It just like let him drop all the bombs on the New World Order and the Western deep state and be like, sick, bro. Nice analysis. Cause you know that he has better analysis on the Western deep state than just about anybody, because they've been his adversary for the last 20 or 30 years. That is like an existential threat to him and his entire nation. So honestly, there's probably few experts better versed in the Western deep state than President Putin. You know, not to say that he doesn't have his own deep state to contend with, and Russia is extremely corrupt and has a whole bunch of oligarchical scheming going on behind the scenes at all times. It's important to note out when you're bringing up Kirill Dmitriev and the Sovereign Wealth Fund over there, that there's a lot of wealth over there, and there's a lot of kind of sketchy history behind a lot of that wealth too. A complicated figure with a lot of, you know, secret knowledge and tea to spill should he want to. So I'm very curious. I'm glad you pointed that out. I'm following him now.
Yeah, I'm seeing all these little connections, all these little hints at something bigger happening behind the scenes. And of course today Trump had a long phone call with Putin and is talking about, you know, meeting him in Hungary, which is an interesting place to meet, with Orban leading the charge. So we'll see what comes next. We only have a few minutes left, and I want to get to this, because searching your name today on Google, this was the first response, and it's actually from jpost.com, but Representative Khanna shares documentary featuring Ian Carroll. So I guess your appearance in this documentary was enough to inspire a very angry article about this. But this goes back to what I was asking you earlier about the possibility of uniting with the left. Is it possible? And, you know, I'm just so baffled by the left, because I'll tell you a very, very quick story. In response to the young Republicans, you know, getting in trouble, I put out a post saying, you know, here's what you should say. You should say, screw you. We're not going to clutch our pearls. We're fighting the real bad guys. Somebody commented underneath that, and I couldn't tell if the comment was pro or against me. So I'm like, what is this? I go to the guy's profile to be like, okay, is he on my side or not? He's following me. He turns out he's the drummer from the band Guster. I'll just come out and say he's the drummer from the band Guster. And I'm like, oh, I love that. You know, I used to listen to that band all the time. Like, thanks for following me. And he's like, yeah, I'm actually on the far left. I'm actually like really liberal, but like, I like your takes on Israel. And I think like this is a good time to, you know, come together on all this stuff. And I'm saying to him, like, maybe, but you know, your side is deranged and crazy. And the guy goes, so, you know, he's like, to me, the people that were in that chat, those are the real bad guys. But also I've been listening to Nick Fuentes more and, you know, some of his, and I'm like, how can you think that the young Republicans are the real bad guys, but you're listening to Nick Fuentes? Like, it's crazy. It's nuts. And so I just don't know how to bridge this gap, but it seems like we're so close. Like, can you talk about that for a little bit and about your
100%
this documentary and everything?
I mean, like, I lived that gap. I came from the left, not that far on the left by any means, but came from the left. I had a lot of friends that are definitely that far left, and I swung super hard right, and now I'm somewhere in the middle. And Honestly, I think that for a lot of conservatives, like, just saying, a lot of conservatives don't actually know that many liberals. I think that a lot of conservatives, their perspective on liberals is from the internet and from, you know, the salacious stories that break on Twitter and on Fox News and shit. And that's not what 99% of liberals are. You know, most liberals are regular people, just like most conservatives aren't like in the Klan and waving torches and trying to lynch black people. Like, right? Like these are caricatures of both sides. And certainly the left has a huge issue with this deeply funded, militant, not organic, radical element in its midst. But that's not like the regular liberals. And I think you're super right that there is this coming together that's happening because we've sort of traded issues on certain issues where like the left has always been kind of anti-Israel in this way. And now they're seeing a lot of these people on the right saying those things. They're like, oh, that's one of these things I care a lot about. And it kind of breaks your frame when you say like, oh, wait, you're with me on that? Then like, what else are we in on? Right. And I think that in general, we've just got a lot of these issues that are starting to flip flop and our leadership has gone back and forth and back and forth and betrayed both sides so many times that now we're sort of all standing in the same room, not the fringes, not the crazies that are funded by George Soros and shit, but like the regular people are all in one room looking around and being like, well, we are actually all a lot more similar than we are different. Right. And, you know, they keep trying to stoke more fighting. They keep on bringing in more, you know, divisive content. But ultimately, like, it's not really working. And I think we're in that stage where you get to the house party and everyone kind of doesn't know each other very well. And it's like the first year at college and like everyone's sort of like trying to act cool and make friends and like drink a beer. But like ultimately it's kind of awkward at first, but like you're all there in the same room and you all get it and you're all there to have a party. And like the way I see it is that we just need a little bit of time to adjust to each other. Because for example, your buddy that you were talking about there, well, not your buddy, but this guy that commented, who was like, hey, actually, like, I have the same take as you on this. I have totally different, right? There's this adjustment period of being like, first, holy shit, the person that I thought was Hitler agrees with me on one of the biggest topics.
Right.
Okay. And then it kind of breaks your frame and you have to, I think it takes time. I think it takes months and years to readjust to realizing that like, all these people that I thought were demons are actually not that different than me. That's crazy, right? And for some people, I think some people are far more flexible in their, you know, mind and soul and are easy to, they can adjust more quickly. But I think a lot of people that are really like firm in their beliefs and have a lot of like integrity in what they think, I think for a lot of people it'll take years to adjust, but like we are all kind of in the same room together now. And, you know, there'll be lots of forces trying to push us apart, but ultimately, you know, as authoritarianism rises, as wealth inequality expands, as the haves and have nots drift way and way further apart, I think it's kind of inevitable that the regular people just get it. Like we're kind of all in this together. We're all getting left in, you know, the bottom of technocratic hell together, whether we think about red or blue or left or right. It doesn't really matter.
Right. I just, the reason it baffles me is because like my positions typically are just a fraction of like a whole worldview that goes into it. And it's always just baffling to me. I'm like, how do we share this when you're just, when I think they're just wrong completely on 90% of everything else. So I'm just like, what is this? You know, how can we bridge this gap? Cause I do think that there's a future in that. And I think you're right. You know, it's going to take some adjustment and maybe we can both kind of chill out on, you know, what we think, but when the other side is trying to put my boy in a dress, I'm like, well, okay, certain
yeah, there
things.
There are some non-negotiables.
Right? There's some things that it's like, how do we get around that? Well, I think the future is bright and things are crazy and, there really has been a turning point recently, not to make a pun. Ian Carroll, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our ultramethylene blue. So I said, oh, with all our guests, we asked him to take it, and you just gave me your brief testimony. So I would look, because I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at thealexjonesstore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultramethylene blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William, so when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, oh, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with Methylene Blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me with, I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up, and so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, be honest though, because you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it, USP, didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. This one, I'm not trying to differentiate, it's just true. It's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour is on. This is The War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us in everything that we do here. We're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Corn Pop, who's leading the charge against transgenderism in schools in Maine. There's some other interesting developments around the country, like this one. Philadelphia Medical Examiner re-rules Ellen Greenberg's 2011 death by 20 stab wounds a suicide. So this was a murder that occurred in 2011 of a Philadelphia school teacher, Ellen Greenberg, and it was ruled a suicide, despite the fact that she was stabbed 20 times, the majority of which were in the back of her neck and head. She was 27 years old, stabbed 20 times, including 10 times in the back of the neck and head. Greenberg was found deceased in a Manayunk apartment she shared with her fiancé, Sam Goldberg, and the wounds were ruled to have been self-inflicted. A kitchen knife with a 10-inch blade was found sticking out of her chest. Greenberg's parents have fought for 14 years to have their daughter's death re-examined. And after the case was reopened, Philadelphia's chief medical examiner, Lindsay Simon, announced she's standing by the city's controversial ruling. And this is interesting because it involves the current governor of Pennsylvania, rather, who I believe was involved in this case. And this has sort of come back to haunt him in some ways. But people are very, very confused by this, how you could possibly say it was a suicide with 20 stab wounds. And I'm not sure if the crew can find the pictures of it, but you see the pictures of the medical examiner's, you know, illustration of what the wounds look like and how the knife entered the body. And it's like, there's no way, there's just no way this could ever possibly be a suicide. And yet it was ruled a suicide back then again. And then apparently re-examined today. And they said, yeah, this happened. Then she stabbed herself 20 times. They say, while the distribution of injuries is admittedly unusual, the fact remains that Ellen would be capable of inflicting these injuries herself, Simon said. Again, it's just, that's just bizarre. It just doesn't make any sense. Simon cited Greenberg's anxiety, her new insomnia meds, that led to an increase in energy to act upon her anxious thoughts. This led Simon to write that with all this information considered, it's the opinion of the undersigned that the manner of Ellen Greenberg's death is best classified as suicide. This is despite multiple independent assessments from experts who have asserted that her body was moved, that one of the wounds was inflicted after her death, and the discovery of her body, as attested to by Goldberg, did not happen in the way that he said it did. In February 2025, the pathologist who undertook her autopsy back in 2011 reversed course and said he now does not believe Greenberg stabbed herself 20 times. And I don't have it pulled up here. Roger Stone was tweeting about it earlier, and I retweeted his tweet because he basically said, you know, this case is not over. It's not ending anytime soon, and it's going to bring down the governor of Pennsylvania, who, of course, is in the news anyway because his house was firebombed by a radical Palestinian activist. Roger Stone says, zero chance Ellen Greenberg killed herself. This is a Josh Shapiro cover-up that will bring him down. I can't remember exactly how he was involved, but I think he may have been the prosecutor at the time. Before he became governor. So it looks like we may be witnessing a political cover-up 15 years in the making at this point. Then there's this, and this is a good thing, actually. Old Roe Swig on X. Am I reading this right? Is the GOP actually going to end H-1B and go beyond? So this is a draft, I guess, of a executive order. End the H-1B abuse machine. Repeal INA, and then a bunch of numbers below, bar new petition on enactment and sunset existing approvals inside 12 months with penalty for status overruns. So this has been a major sort of conflict in the Trump administration with the populist, you know, who support him, and then the donors who rely on H-1B visas. But for a very long time, people have been saying this is total abuse, exposing the way H-1B visas are abused in the way that, you know, they pretend to advertise for Americans to get the job because they're required to by law, but really they advertise in newspapers no one reads in ways that no one would respond to the ad. And all of this research behind the scenes has moved forward, and it seems like it may be ending sometime soon, which would be great.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats and the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are, dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I've got a story from the Times of India here. Corn pop. Activists strip at Maine school board meeting to protest trans-inclusive sports policy. Comes along with a video. Three activists stripped down to their underwear during a Maine school board meeting to protest the district's trans-inclusive sports policy. The eyebrow-raising protest, led by local firebrand Nick Blanchard, who fittingly goes by Corn Pop, took place in Augusta as two women and a man slowly disrobed while Blanchard delivered a dramatic speech. Two women and a man slowly and perfunctorily removed their clothes at the close of the Augusta school board meeting, school department meeting, as Blanchard, who goes by the name Corn Pop, delivered this impassioned monologue. Let's go to the video now, and then we have Corn Pop joining us on the other side. But here's the video that's going totally viral, reposted by Libs of TikTok and Colin Rugg and a number of other, you know, big right-wing influencers. Clip 18, here's the very impactful and now viral protest.
I had an opportunity to be heroes. You guys became heroes. Now I'll show you guys how uncomfortable it is.
Point of order.
We've asked that we use...
Oh, so wait. They're covered. You feel uncomfortable? Because that's what these young girls feel like when a boy walks into the locker room and starts unchanging in front of them. Yeah, you feel uncomfortable, right? Feel uncomfortable, huh? That's what these young girls feel like every time a young boy changes in front of them. You can look at me like that all you want. That's exactly how they feel. And you, Miss Muffy, oh, well, I don't know if I stand with girls or if I stand with my, you know, with the law. See, you don't care how young girls feel? You don't care about the safety of young kids? What about what happened in Virginia with that boy that raped a young girl in a bathroom, then got sent to another school and did it again? What are we going to do when that happens here? How are you going to look that girl in the face and say, sorry, I didn't protect you? This is Maine's capital. We should be setting an example for the rest of the state. You know what example you guys are setting? That we do not care about the young girls in this state. You guys care about politics. Oh, we can't change it because it's not law. It got changed by an executive order by Biden, which is why we're here in the first place.
Wow, what a powerful statement from Nick Blanchard, a.k.a. Corn Pop, who, if you're an InfoWars viewer, you know him well. He's been a regular caller forever, and we've been keeping track of the war, really, Corn Pop, you've been waging against the school districts in Maine and the other local authorities who are, as you point out, refusing to protect women. You can follow Nick on X at PWA1776. That's PWA1776. And he's on TikTok at CornPop_207. You've broken through a few times. You've been, mentioned in mainstream news a few times because of your activism. How does this feel? You feel like you're accomplishing something here? Hold on. We're having trouble hearing you. I'm not sure if we lost audio there. Guys, if we can make sure we're connected. I know we were connected just a second ago, so something must have happened. But I'll tell you that Blanchard stated that more than 150 people have contacted him in support of his stance on the Title IX policy. Central Maine reported, quote, "Do I think these tactics work in a way of changing policy? Probably not," Blanchard told the outlet. "But the only way for tactics to work in a way of changing policy, but the only way to get them to listen is to us to do something crazy and get in the national spotlight. The Augusta School Board voted in favor of their current policy, which adheres to the Maine Human Rights Act. That law allows a student athlete to participate on the team that corresponds with their gender identity." And guys, just let me know when we have Corn Pop connected. Are we connected? Okay, sorry, Corn Pop. We couldn't hear you, though. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. Congratulations on waging such an effective information war against the, people that are trying to put men in your daughter's locker room. Tell us about, how this came about, sir.
Well, if you don't mind, real quick, before I start all this, I'd like to give you a plug. I want to, start off with some methylene blue, just so I make sure I get this debut right.
Do I mind? I don't mind in the slightest. I'll take my methyl drive while you take the methylene blue there. The AlexJonesStore.com, folks. Look, Corn Pop has been a major supporter of us for a very long time. And like I said, we've been following your adventures, sometimes misadventures, with the Maine school district. So, yeah, tell us the story for people that don't know.
So pretty much I've been battling this school district for, I would say, going on close to a year now. What made me start going to the Augusta meetings was they tried to push a policy. Not only were boys were allowed to go into the same dressing room with the young girls, but say your daughter felt uncomfortable and she went and said, "Hey, listen, I feel uncomfortable. I'm going to complain about it." She actually gets suspended.
Whoa.
So that's what initially got us going. And I've been going to the Augusta School Board meetings for probably about a year now. And for about 8 months, it's been just me. And for 8 months, the school board has been able to shut me down and completely silence me, to the point to where I've had to put a Chinese communist flag on the chair of the board, because every time I got up there to speak, she wouldn't let me speak. So one thing I did was I pre-wrote my speech, put it in an app, had Trump's voice say the speech, and then I went and put a communist flag on her podium. I mean, but that's not the craziest thing. She's actually had an Augusta resident arrested for speaking 20 seconds over.
Whoa.
So what made this meeting so much different is, since the Augusta district is now in the national spotlight, people showed up. We had two different people that are running for the Maine governor show up.
Wow.
We had state representatives finally show up. So, I mean, it was a good feeling.
I bet it was. I bet it is. And the crew's pulling up, other big accounts tweeting out your stuff, which is great. We need more people aware of what you're doing, and hopefully next time it'll be even bigger. What's the response from the school board about this? They just thought you were an annoyance. They could brush you off to the side. They could silence you, and nobody'd care, right? No, it turns out people care about this. Turns out a lot of people care a lot about this. What was their response as you were, I don't even want to call it a stunt, but as you were waging this protest? I mean, how did they react?
Well, to be honest with you, they're kind of used to me by now. So when I walk into the room, it gets quiet. They know that I'm going to pull something crazy off, whether it's putting a communist Chinese, like, they never know what to expect. So this one, you know, you could see the look on all of, on all their faces. They were like, what the heck is going on? But at the same time, like I said in my speech, you know, do you feel uncomfortable? Because that's exactly how these young girls in Maine feel when a young boy walks in and claims he's a girl.
Right.
And honestly, no, we tried to do it the right way during COVID. We went to the school board meetings during COVID. We gave all the school board meeting, I mean, all the school board members peer reviewed facts about how masks was hurting our kids and all this crap. And you know what they did? They did the same thing they're trying to do now. They roll their eyes. The difference between me is I'm not going anywhere. You can shut me down. You can silence me. But guess what? Next month, I'm coming right back.
That's amazing. And then you come back with a couple people in tow, and then you come back with even more, and suddenly you're showing up with, I don't want to call them a mob, but, a lot of concerned citizens now that people are aware of what's going on. And it's something that we see repeated over and over. How do we deal with this, Corn Pop? Because so often people go to their city councils or their district school board meeting, and it's like you might as well be talking to a brick wall. The people up there just don't care. And it's like they keep getting elected, but they're just rude to the constituents. They don't even pretend to be listening to them. They laugh at them. They're on their phone, you know, playing Candy Crush while people are really pouring their hearts out in this 1 minute, 3 minute they get to present something. And it's like, how do we deal with this when it seems like every municipality is led and every school district is led by these horrible people that just don't give a damn about sort of the democratic reason that they're there?
Well, that's why I told the Sun Journal when they called me, and her question was, do you think doing stuff like this makes a difference? And I said, it's probably not going to make them change policy, but you know, at the same time, neither is me getting up there and stating the exact facts and giving them reasons why.
Right.
We can try to do it the right way. The only way to make these school board members or any kind of official accountable now is to make them feel, to put them in the national spotlight, make them feel as awkward as they make everybody else feel. Treat them like the peasants that they, these people forget, they work for us. We're the boss. They're the employee. They need to remember that. And until they remember that, we, the American people, hold the power. And until we, the people, realize that, nothing's going to change.
100%. Again, you can follow Nick on X at PWA1776. And we're going to keep talking, but I just want to remind people, because I always get questions, how do I follow that guy? PWA1776. That's Patriots with Attitude, right? I want to ask you, because you're such a shining example of it. I had somebody comment on a post the other day, and they said, you know, they said, I'm a young person and I want to speak up, but it's, like, it's kind of scary. It's scary to speak up as a conservative. It shouldn't be at this point. You know, you would think that the culture would shift and everybody would realize, okay, Trump's won twice. It's like, we're not, you know, we don't control the culture. Maybe they'd be a little bit quieter, but that's just not the way it works. The left just asserts themselves. They just say things that are so offensive and outrageous, but they just say it as if everybody agrees with them. What advice do you have for people that are sick of staying quiet and sort of smiling and nodding along while their liberal friends say crazy crap? Like, what advice would you have for people who are still scared to speak up, but they want to?
Well, the one quote that I live by is the silent majority can no longer be silent no more. Guys, there's way more of us than there is of them. And once we realize that, it's game over. Once you stand up there and have the encouragement to say what is right, it is going to give the other people that are standing there the same encouragement. People are so scared because of the cancer culture that goes on in today's world. You just have to learn that. Go look at, so I have people in Maine that post about me all the time. They call my jobs. You've reported about it, how, you know, the Daily Mail wrote an article how I had someone call my job trying to get me fired and all this. You got to learn it. These people, they have the same 5-15 followers. Ignore it. Get up there, stand 10 toes down, and stand up for what is right, because that's what people want to hear. And once someone sees someone doing it, it's going to give someone else the encouragement to do it. And then the next person, and then the next person. I mean, I'm a prime example. I've been doing it since 2020, when standing up wasn't cool. People called me radical. Hell, the main GOP won't have nothing to do with me. But you know what? Now they're starting to see that people like me, we have our position in this fight. And that's the difference between, I think, between the left and the right. The left, they utilize everybody. They realize everybody has a role. Us, that's one thing we need to learn. We need to learn that not everybody fights the same. We all have a role. We all have a voice.
Amen. And we all need to utilize. And actually, that was kind of my next question is, you know, why this topic in particular? Because, you know, on InfoWars, we have to cover everything, right? I feel like I really have a responsibility to cover the waterfront. And so I can't spend all day on transgenderism, even though I could. I can't spend all day on Israel, even though I could. But what we need is we need people out there who are focusing on one issue. So then people like me can sort of, you know, collate it and put it all together. But you've really stood up for the, you know, against the transgender agenda. Was there something about this in particular that, you know, got you going and you thought this is the thing I need to focus on? Was it something in your personal life? Just why this topic in particular? Why is this, you know, driven your activism for so long?
So, I mean, it hasn't just been this topic. I actually stand up to a lot of stuff, but the reason why this topic has been number one right now is because that's the main thing that's going on in Maine. And I don't even have a daughter. I got a young son. And one thing I tell everybody, the reason why I do what I do, because I'll be damned if my son in 15 years has to apologize for being a straight white male.
Right.
And if more men don't start standing up, that's exactly what's going to happen, is your boy is going to have to apologize for being a straight, white, conservative, Christian male.
100%. 100%. And, I mean, to me, this is just, it's such a pernicious and just horrifying phenomenon. Now, luckily, we reported on it yesterday. It seems like transgenderism has peaked and is sort of like going downhill now. Like there's less people calling themselves transgender now than there were in 2023. Hopefully that trend continues. But I know people to this day that, you know, they're just sort of, they don't realize what's going on. You know, it's all just sort of like, well, my daughter came home saying stuff and I don't really get it, but I'm trying to be supportive. And they just don't understand what's really behind this, right? Can you help explain to people, like, why this is not just a matter of, we're letting kids be who they are. It's, we just want them to express themselves. Like, they cloak themselves in these flowery words, but this is something much deeper, isn't it?
First of all, do you remember the cootie stage? What happened to that stage? Why have we sexualized our kids so much that they don't even think about the cootie stage no more? Like, they're not even afraid. Like, I remember, ooh, they have the cooties.
Right.
Like, no, now 10-year-olds are talking about sex. I mean, hell, we're handing out surveys here in Maine asking kids in 7th, 8th, 9th grade, when's the last time you had anal sex? When's the last time you had oral sex?
Jeez.
These are things that they're asking kids in school. When did we do that before? The reason why the transgender movement has grown the way it has is because they turned it into a fad. This is what, no, I don't agree with bullying, but at some aspect, bullying had its point.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like if a kid came into a school thinking he was a dog, I'm sorry, you would have got bullied.
Yep.
And we have kids here in Maine that actually do, we have school districts that allow that. I had a kid a parent that reached out to me that their son got suspended for 7 days because a furry barked at him and he barked back. Like that's the kind of things we have going on here in Maine.
It's that type of stuff that's like you want to say, there's no way that's what happened. But like, no, that's actually what happened. And you know, I did a bit on this last week too, because there keep being articles like this. Here's one from today. Top sociology journal says young kids should be sexualized. Top sociological journal says young kids should be sexualized and it's colonizers' fault that they aren't. And this is so creepy, but there's this weird connection between like innocence. They want to draw a connection between like innocence and white supremacy or something. And it's like, you're being oppressive by telling us children aren't sexualized. Like there's something just so unbelievably creepy about this. And I don't see how more people aren't outraged by this. So is everybody just in a funk? Is everybody just distracted? They just don't care. Like how do you have academics and science journals publishing articles about how children should be sexualized, and nobody bats an eye. Is that just retarded, Corn Pop? Like, what is happening here?
I wouldn't say everybody's retarded. Everybody's busy. Everybody's working. I mean, it costs, like, the cost of living nowadays. I mean, it's hard to, you know, work and still be able to pay attention to everything that's going on. So, I mean, that's one way that you guys have talked about this. That's one way that they have dumbed us down. You know, they've gotten us to the point where all we do is work, work, work. We can't pay attention to what's going on. We send our kids to a school 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And really, if you think about it, the government's almost raising your kids.
Yep.
'Cause how many days a year are you sending your kid to that school? That's why your kid comes home and doesn't have the same values that you try to establish in your house.
Yep.
And that's what happened when they killed the nuclear family.
100%. 100%.
But, I mean, let me say this too. You know, everyone thinks because, you know, I'm so big on this whole thing about boys and girls locker rooms and stuff like that, that I'm this big gay hater and all that. Two of my best friends are two gay women. One of whom you've had on the show because she's a J6er and had to go to prison.
Mm.
And guess what? They don't wear the pride flag. They don't rock with the alphabet mafia. What they do in their bedroom doesn't define them as a person. What defines them as a person is their character, who they are.
100%. Absolutely. And of course, that's the way they get away with this, right? They say, oh, if you're telling me that you don't want a man in a locker room with your daughter, it's because you hate gay people. It's like, this is ridiculous. These are not the only options. It's a false dichotomy. You can love everybody. You can love gay people or not care about gay people and still recognize there is a very disturbing trend happening here. And I'm sure you saw it. It went totally viral. When the candidate for governor of Virginia was asked, and she was put to the question, do you not want men in the locker room with your daughter, or would you be okay with a grown man getting naked in front of your 5-year-old daughter? And she has no answer, because there is no answer. And it's not a trick question. It's not a riddle where, you know, they're setting her up for failure. It's just they have no answer because their policy is insane. So this really can't go on much longer. And actually, you know, there's some stories about that. Fenway Health, which is a big healthcare provider in Boston, if I'm not mistaken, will limit gender affirming care for patients under 19. So they're no longer performing, you know, castration surgeries on people under 19. So we are sort of reclaiming sanity here or there, but you know, this policy has always been insane, and it's about time people start questioning it.
Yeah, no, I agree. But hey, while I got the info, please, everybody, tag Linda McMahon. Tell Linda McMahon to cut off the federal funding here in Augusta and send a message to the chair, Miss Muffy, because if you go back and watch, it came to a tie. And you know who broke the tie? The chair. The chair said, you know what? No. So Linda McMahon, please cut off federal funding to the Augusta district. Send a message. The Augusta district is the capital of Maine. Also, real quick, we got a school board election. We have a chance to flip these seats. We got three people that we have that we can put on this board. One of them, a gay conservative. And guess what? If we get these seats, we will get Title IX reversed and back to the way it's supposed to be.
That's brilliant. And that was actually my next question. What should people do? Obviously, they can follow you at PWA 1776, PWA 1776, on TikTok at cornpop_207. I'm sure they can reach out to you or tag you in things, but you're saying tag the Department of Education chair, Linda McGann,
yes,
and to, you know, help you guys take over the school board so you don't have to, you know, suffer under these insane people with their suicidal altruism, putting your children at risk because they think it's loving. It's just completely absurd. What else can they do in the last 30 seconds?
I mean, what else they could do? They could add me on Facebook, add me on X. Just keep following, keep up with the support. Email the chair of the Augusta School Board. Let her know that what she's doing here in the Augusta District is not okay, and that boys should not be allowed in the same bathroom as little girls. The only way to keep this going is to keep the pressure on the board. We also have a governor's race here in Maine. We have a lot of significant races here in Maine, guys. We need everybody involved. We need patriots to start standing up.
And we,
guys,
need people standing up all over the country. It's not just Maine this is happening. It's in your neighborhood, too. Be like Corn Pop. Yes. Go get involved.
Yes.
Follow him at PWA 1776.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish Steam Off was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of, like, thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the Steam Off because it's a thyroid issue, and the Steam Off has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The Methylene Blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. It's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his self-element formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together. And they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it. And it has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's for good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones' picture is on like my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to, like, the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones until I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, it's not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize it until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish Sea Moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. Nope, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Folks, if you have a young son, might I suggest a book called Sir Nigel. Sir Nigel by Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Sherlock Holmes books, but his personal favorite character he ever made was not Sherlock Holmes, it was Sir Nigel. And there's another book, I think it's a prequel called White Company, but it's just a great adventure story from the Middle Ages. But I was thinking about it recently because there's one scene, it's like one of my favorite scenes in the whole book, and you've got a castle that's under siege by an army, and there's a gap in the middle, pretty far distance, and the army, the archers from the army on the ground are shooting up at the guys on the wall. So the guys on the wall, archers also, are all ducking and hiding behind these crenellations of the castle wall, trying to avoid the arrows. The arrows are raining down and just barely missing them, and they're sort of trapped there, and they kind of can't get away. And I think they're trying to lower the door or shut the door, but they were trying to reach something that they couldn't reach because they were trapped behind these crenellations. And then a knight shows up. And then the knight shows up in his head-to-toe metal suit of armor, and he walks right out on the wall, and all the arrows that they're firing just blink, 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 and they can't hurt him. And he walks over, just getting rained down on arrows, and just pulls the lever and shuts the door and walks back, and they can't hurt him. And I was thinking about that because that's what it's like to know the truth and to tell the truth. You just feel invulnerable. All these other people, they're all hiding, they're all cowering, they're all, scared of what's happening. But when you have the armor of truth, you just walk right out in the open, and they can't do a damn thing about it. And they can fire all the arrows they want, but they just plink right off. You don't even feel them. It's actually kind of fun. It's actually kind of fun to watch them try, knowing that there's nothing they can say to you. There's nothing they can do to you. And that's like the feeling I get when somebody like Corn Pop walks up to the podium, and he knows they hate him. He knows they have their barbs out for him. He knows that, there are going to be people saying things about him, but it's just like he's telling the truth. He's standing on business. No one's going to stop him. And it really does empower you with this feeling of invulnerability. And it's something I wish more people could experience. Once you experience it, you'll be hooked. You'll be addicted. And a lot of it is just about getting over the imposed guilt that you're supposed to feel for saying the truth. There's all of these pressures from your friends and family, from the media, from politicians, and they've, indoctrinated most people into not saying what they know is true by being too afraid. Yeah, look at this. That's you. There's the lies. Oh, they got through. No, still didn't work. I'm telling you, folks, if you had a suit of armor in the Middle Ages, you were very different than everybody else. And that's what it's like to be an info warrior. That's what I was saying yesterday, in my advice to people who, want to stand up and don't really know how. You got to just ground yourself in something unimpeachable, and you just assert that. And people know. I mean, people might, and it could actually shake some people out of the trap they don't even know they're in. Right? They don't even know that they're brainwashed. They don't, they say white as a insult, and they don't even know why. And it's like you can just go, well, actually, I think completely differently. And you'll see people will look at you, they'll go, what? You what? But you're nice. I don't know. You're a Nazi. I'm not a Nazi. What are you talking about? No, this is the truth. It's just true. It's just how it is. Here's why. Do you want to know more or not? I mean, I can tell you. That's why it's like I have like a hard time debating because I don't argue. I'll just explain to you. And if you want to listen, that's fine. If you don't, you won't. You can say whatever you want to me. I know the truth. I know what's happening. If I don't, then I'll listen to you, right? If I don't know something, I'm not going to assert it. But once I know something, once something is absolutely true in my mind, then I'll just assert it without fear and without, limiting and curtailing what I truly believe. So I love seeing people that are info warriors armor themselves with the truth and go out into the battlefield and actually achieve victory. And it's not always easy, and it doesn't always come quick. But man, what we have inspired here at InfoWars, what I've been inspired to do, I mean, lives have changed, laws have changed. And if you're listening to my voice right now, you can be the engine behind that. At the very least, you can help share our clips. At the very least, you can help us spread the information, provide us the information we don't know. And of course, share the links, share the content. Follow us on X, follow us on social media, and of course, support us at thealexjonesstore.com. wearing an InfoWars shirt is like wearing that suit of armor, that impenetrable metal shield of truth that they can sling all the lies and slander at you that they want, and it just doesn't affect you. And it's up to you whether it affects you. And like the old Roman quote, I always say, you know, a foe is not defeated until they believe themselves so. So just don't believe you're defeated. you can just assert what you believe and things say whatever the hell they want, and then you can win. It's amazing, and it works. You should try it. Now, I got a lot of videos still to go to. I want to explain a little bit about what's going on with the Supreme Court, because this could actually be a major decision coming from the Supreme Court, and it's about damn time, and it sort of is in line with other stuff going on, but more things that we need to see happening. And what I'm talking about is the reversal, the undoing of the Civil Rights Act. You know, the bill that was passed, the series of bills that was passed, the Great Society from LBJ, you know, the thing that destroyed the black community in America, the thing that made it legal to discriminate against white people and made it illegal for white people to, you know, gather in groups or, you know, prefer to live around each other. It has been a unmitigated disaster, as far as I can tell. I mean, it didn't solve the things it wanted to solve, and it made a whole bunch of problems a hell of a lot worse and created other ones out of whole cloth. It's been a failure. It's been an absolute failure. And at this point, it's simply been weaponized to destroy people rather than uplift and help people. And of course, the irony of all of this is it's not just a mathematical equation. If it was, things might be different. But there's always, it's always up to the people enforcing it, whether or not it counts, whether or not they do enforce it or don't. Of course, what I'm talking about are things like the fact that as a white person, I am now an absolute minority in Texas. There are more Hispanic people than there are white people in Texas today. So if this was just an algorithm, then all of those benefits for minorities would now just immediately apply to white people. And you'd have quotas for hiring white people, and we'd have special districts set aside for us and all that sort of stuff. If it was just, hey, minorities get this benefit, then we would get the benefit. Now that we're minorities, that didn't happen, did it? No, despite the fact that we are now minorities in our own country and in our own state, the majority people are still getting benefits reserved for minorities. So these rules, these laws, these considerations are long overdue that they're thrown in the trash. They're unnecessary. At the least, they're unnecessary, and actually they're actively damaging America at this point. So it's about damn time that we undo some of these laws. And you'll hear in this video, you know, the way they try to justify these things existing. And it's not something you can quantify. It's not something that, again, is scientific. If you say, well, these laws were implemented to undo past racial discrimination, it's like, how do you quantify that? How do you say what past discrimination means, and how do you, you know, fix it now? And this just makes no sense. So the upshot of this, the outcome of this, is that you have congressional districts that were carved out specifically for minority groups, or for racial groups, to choose a better word. And basically they're looking at this and going, this doesn't make any sense. This is wrong. Well, why do we have these special provisions carved out for people? And it's been 60, 70 years since this stuff was implemented. I think we've had enough time to sort of normalize things and get over whatever restrictions occurred during the Jim Crow era. I think we're beyond that at this point. So the Supreme Court is looking at these redistricting maps, these districts and all of what was established as a way to, you know, make up for the lack of representation that existed post-slavery. But this is still, you know, again, it's yet another place in culture and politics where there's a divergence that's occurring, where at the same time that people are sort of waking up to the fact that, all right, we don't need to be discriminating against white people anymore. And we're not exactly the dominant force we once were. It's actually kind of working against everybody at this point. They're realizing that. At the same time, you have stories like this. Atlanta moves ahead with a reparations plan for black residents. So it's like they're still pushing reparations. In California, they're still talking about doing reparations. This is all just absolutely ridiculous, and I'll show you a clip to illustrate that on the other side. But let's first go to this clip of what is going on in the Supreme Court and what they're deciding. This is, well, clip 16 is good, but let's go to clip 16, or let's go to clip 22 first. This is what the Supreme Court's deciding today.
Tell me what was argued in front of the Supreme Court today and where it appears the justices were likely to fall.
So lawyers argued that Louisiana violated the Constitution when it drew a second majority black district in order to comply with the Voting Rights Act. For decades, the Supreme Court has interpreted the Voting Rights Act to require these opportunity districts that have large black and brown populations so that these communities can elect the representatives of their choice. But today, lawyers argued that that is unconstitutional, that taking race into account to draw districts, even if it is designed to boost representation for minorities, even if it is designed to remedy past discrimination against minorities, that that violates the Equal Protection Clause by considering race and that the Constitution must be colorblind. And it sounded like a majority of the justices are leaning toward embracing some form of that argument, which would essentially dismantle the Voting Rights Act as we know it today.
How do you know that that's the way that they were leaning?
All six of the Republican-appointed justices indicated that they think that the Voting Rights Act has essentially outlived its usefulness. Justice Brett Kavanaugh continually said that there has to be a time limit on any race-conscious law and suggested that the expiration date for the VRA has arrived. Justice Barrett suggested that Congress went beyond what the Constitution requires in prohibiting these kind of racially skewed maps and that it couldn't be squared with the Equal Protection Clause. Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, Justice Gorsuch all indicated that protecting black communities by drawing race-conscious maps that give them more representation is actually racial discrimination, that it is unconstitutional because of the mere consideration of race. And so the law, again, as we know it, must fall. Now, I don't know exactly how the justices will decide to dismantle the law. They could interpret it differently. They could strike it down. But all six of them seem to be leaning towards some kind of result that would radically weaken, if not altogether demolish, what we know of the Voting Rights Act today.
So if this does happen, if it is overturned, if your assessment of where they're leaning is correct, let us show what could be impacted. This is a few maps showing VRA-protected congressional districts that could be affected. There's one in Louisiana. There is another in Alabama. And there is another in Texas, and those are the number of specific districts that could change. You see Florida in there as well and a few other states.
And let's go to clip 16 here, because this explains exactly what a big deal this is and how good this this whole thing is for Republicans. And this goes along with the redistricting that California is wanting to do. Remember, Texas was going to redistrict, and then California's like, well, if you do that, then we'll do it too. And that was not a fight that they should have started. So it's looking like, you know, this time 4 years from now, or even maybe even 2 years from now, when we go to the polls to, you know, elect Congress, Democrats might be down a whole hell of a lot of seats. Let's watch.
So this is what the party pickups would be for congressional districts. Republicans, 5. Missouri, 1. North Carolina, 1. Ohio, 2 or 3. Indiana, 1 or 2. Florida, still discussion down there, but that could be another gold mine for them if they tipped it even further their way. Kansas, 1. New Hampshire, 1. And Nebraska. Democrats, Utah, California, Maryland. Look at this. If you offset California and Texas, Missouri and Utah, North Carolina and Maryland, everything left over is an advantage to the Republicans. And don't forget, the Supreme Court is considering what could really be the end of the Voting Rights Act, which would protect minority groups. So you don't have a state that's half black, for example, that elects only one congressional member and everybody else goes to the Republicans that would represent that population in some way. So if that is gutted, Democrats could lose 19 seats. This would be a huge amount. But this is also a measure of how much the White House is concerned about this, because Donald Trump knows if the Democrats get the House again, there could be new investigations just like last time. There could be a new impeachment. There could be a lot of impediment to these plans that right now the Republicans in the House and Senate are letting run like a freight train.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a couple different things happening here. There's the redistricting. There's the Supreme Court deciding on the Voting Rights Act. And then there is a lot of talk that's exactly what I've been looking this whole time through my papers. This is exactly what I was looking for from Right Angle News on X. The Supreme Court is signaling it will strike down Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, allowing Republicans to redraw southern districts to eliminate 12 or more Democratic-held seats in the House. So we're talking Democrats being down 12, Republicans being up 12, by simply eliminating congressional districts that were deliberately designed to, you know, favor one race over another. And I've said since I started InfoWars and even before, you know, thinking about like, well, what do we do about this whole racial conflict? And like, well, do you have, you know, benefits for these people or whatever? And like, the answer is very simple. It's just, how about no discrimination for anybody? How about you try to set up systems in which any racial discrimination at all ever is eliminated or minimized as much as humanly possible? And it could even go so far as to, hell, now that we're having a digital ID, maybe this would be even easier. But, you know, if you could submit resumes with a number instead of a name, like use your social security number to submit resumes or something, to where it's like, how do we strip any of that stuff away and only focus on the meritocratic, you know, abilities of the person that you're judging? Who gets the job? Who gets a vote? How do we just remove race from the equation? Because I think that would be, I mean, how could you say that's unfair? How could anybody say that's unfair if you just say, look, it was impossible for us to even consider race? We didn't know your name. We didn't know your race. We didn't know where you grew up. We went off your grades and your, you know, past accomplishments. And so, you know, we hired this person over that person. I mean, that has to be the answer, right? I mean, what else could the answer be? What's the other answer? You're going to have, you know, carve outs from the government and benefits for a certain race until they become really successful, and then you remove them from them and give them to the other race to build them up? Or do you want to bring all the races down to the lowest common denominator, because it's a lot easier to bring down than it is to build up? So, you know, if you're going to try to get equality, if that's your ultimate goal, then you're going to want to tear down certain populations, because it's a lot harder than building up other populations. So that's all nonsense. Why don't you just remove race as a matter of any of this? And it's almost, you know, this almost reminds me of one of the famous, actually one of Trump's famous involvements in politics long before he ever ran for office, where he was arguing about casino rights. And he was saying, look, these people aren't Native Americans. And people were going, how dare you bring race into this? And he's like, you're the ones who said, you know, this is for this race only. If you want to give away things on the basis of race, I'm saying these guys don't look Indian to me. They don't look Native American. They're white guys who claim they are, so they can get this benefit. I'm not getting the benefit because I am white. These guys are white too, but they're saying they're Native American. You're the ones that made this all about race. So let's just remove it. How about we just don't have that? How about that's just not part of our law? And if you succeed, you succeed. And if you fail, you fail. Sorry. How about that's the standard? And I would like to get back to that. And it seems like we are moving back to that. And it seems like either we've had 60 years of, you know, racially designated benefits, either that has worked and we can, you know, should probably be able to cut them off at this point. You know, 60 years is probably enough. Now, you know, you're still getting, so what, 300 years from now, we're still going to be making up for 15 years of Jim Crow. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Or they never worked in the first place, and actually all the benefits that the government claimed they were giving to people actually destroyed the very communities they were meant to help, so they shouldn't exist anyway. So how about we just do away with all of this crap? How about the Great Society gets flushed down the toilet, the Civil Rights Act gets eliminated, and we can just all exist together equally as Americans, regardless of your race, color, your creed? Isn't that the ultimate goal? Why aren't we getting there yet? And the reason we aren't getting there is because, well, people benefit from these. Why would the Native Americans want to keep the racial aspect of, you know, their casino ownership? Because they get to own casinos. Like, that's why. So these people, these groups, these demographics are getting benefits from it. They don't want it to go away, but it's not fair. It's not equal. It's not striving to reach equality, and it's not capable of reaching equality anyway. So why don't we just do away with all this? Wouldn't that be nice? And I want to go to a clip now of Steven Crowder, because he does this barbershop thing where he goes into a barbershop with a bunch of black guys and just talks to them man to man. And I love it. I think it's great. And I think the way Steven Crowder approaches these topics is exactly the way we all need to be approaching these topics. Not, you know, treating black people like they're little children that need to be, you know, kept away from the truth. They can't handle it. Or, well, we have to, you know, praise them as we, you know, don't be mad at me, but here's what I think. Like, no, you just, aren't we all people? Aren't we all human beings? I don't think of you as less. So I'm going to talk to you like I talk to anybody. That's how Steven Crowder approaches it. And he's having great results. Let's go to clip 24 here.
That are $1 trillion, $1 billion companies that started in the 1600s, 1700s, that are still around. And they benefited and profited immensely from that.
What if it's a company that never had slaves? Should they pay reparations?
No, not that the company had slaves, but we had companies that insured slaves. You had companies that transported slaves.
But what if it's a company that did none of it? Should they pay?
No, if they didn't have anything to do with chattel slavery, no, they shouldn't.
Neither did I.
The companies that should.
But let me say this.
But your grandfather was here in the United States, I don't know, you said you're from Canada, I don't know. We're not worried about it. We're worried about the people.
What if your grandfather was a slave owner and mine wasn't?
My grandfather was.
What if he was? Because
my grandfather was a sharecropper in Plaquemine, Louisiana, in a little small town called Bayagula. So he was two generations removed from slavery. So I know I have a root in slavery.
Okay.
Somebody owned my great-great-grandfather.
What if I have no root in slavery?
Well, you don't own nothing. You don't owe anything. Your grandfather, if your grandfather from Canada, he wasn't down here owning slaves.
Okay, I'm just trying to. So then people who didn't owe,
down here telling
we don't pay reparations.
He owe money.
But Steve,
here's what I'm telling you. Hold on a second. Here's what I'm telling you. Right. If you're to go through the numbers, sir, do we agree? If I have no connection to slavery whatsoever, that I don't owe.
Why? You, Steve,
me.
You don't.
Do we
you
agree?
Don't.
Okay.
Yeah. You
so
don't.
Do you realize that you could take all the white people in this country, and if you're going to add up everyone where you could actually trace the lineage to slave owners or had any involvement, you would end up with maybe 2 or 3%. 2 or 3% of white people in this country.
There go them numbers. There go them numbers.
You throw out.
There go them numbers. There go them numbers.
Most of us have not.
Somebody did it.
Can I fairly ask?
Somebody did.
Yeah, and
somebody
Africans sold them in the slave.
Somebody owed.
It's still going on right now.
Somebody owed.
There are more slaves on earth right now than ever. Did you know that?
Steve, let me ask you a question. We're not gonna really get to the heart of it. Let me ask you this. Are you aware of what's going on with McDonald's right now?
McDonald's the company?
Yeah, McDonald's the company.
I'm aware they can't get my filet of fish right anytime I f***ing go.
You know, that's great content. That's great content. I mean, it's a ridiculous idea. Reparations. You're going to take money from people that never had slaves and give it to people who never were slaves. Great. Great idea. That's called theft. That's literally just called stealing. That's not actually reparations. You're just stealing, actually. But they're still going for it. They're still, you know, trying to achieve this. And again, it's ridiculous. Nobody should stand for it or feel guilty about things that you had nothing to do with. Probably didn't even really benefit from. Let's go to this video. This just released. We're learning more about the indictment of John Bolton, and it appears like it may be more crazy than we thought. All we heard was that it had to do with classified documents. It may have maybe more intense than that. Let's go to this video.
Yeah, so John Bolton was charged with 18 federal counts, and I apologize, I'm going to look down. I'm reading this. We're still just getting this. We have the first 8 counts are transmission of national defense information. The second set of 9 counts, that's counts 9 through 18, is retention of national defense information. And that looks like it's U.S. Code Title 19, Section 793 D and E, which is part of the Espionage Act. Now, there was another statute that they were considering, and it looks like they've only charged him with those Espionage Act statutes, but we're still reading through this indictment. It's 26 pages long. There's a lot of background information here, and I apologize, but we're literally just getting this in right now, so I'm still.
So there you go. Former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton indicted 18 counts and indicted on the Espionage Act. That is interesting. That's kind of a much bigger deal than just, you know, classified documents. That's what John Bolton wanted Julian Assange charged under, the espionage. I think that is what he was charged under. How the tables have turned, folks. That's the third indictment. Mark it down. Next come the handcuffs. Next come the really big charges. Next come the trials and the mugshots. Keep it up, Trump.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!